This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of In the Afterlight by Alexandra Bracken, performed by Amy McFadden. For Mary Lee, Emily, and the countless others around the world who have worked tirelessly to put this series into your hands, with my love and gratitude. In our youth, our hearts were touched with fire. Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. Prologue. Black is the color that is no color at all. Black is the color of a child's still, empty bedroom, the heaviest hour of night, the one that traps you in your bunk, suffocating in another nightmare. It is a uniform stretched over the broad shoulders of an angry young man. Black is the mud, the lidless eye watching your every breath, the low vibrations of the fence that stretches up to tear at the sky. It is a road. A forgotten night sky broken up by faded stars. It is the barrel of a new gun leveled at your heart. The color of Chubbs's hair, Liam's bruises, Zoo's eyes. Black is a promise of tomorrow bled dry from lies and hate, betrayal. I see it in the face of a broken compass, feel it in the numbing grip of grief. I run. But it is my shadow, chasing, devouring, polluting. It is the button that should never have been pushed, the door that shouldn't have opened, the dried blood that couldn't be washed away. It is the charred remains of buildings, the car hidden in the forest, waiting. It is the smoke. It is the fire. The spark. Black is the color of memory. It is our color, the only one they'll use to tell our story. 1. The shadows grew longer the farther I walked from the center of the city. I headed west toward the sinking sun that set the remainder of the day on fire. I hated that about winter. Night seemed to reach earlier and earlier into the afternoon. Los Angeles's smog-stained sky was painted with dark strokes of violet and ash. Under normal circumstances, I would have been grateful for the additional cover as I navigated the easy grid of surface streets back to our current base. But with the debris from the attack, the installation of military stations and detainment camps, and the congestion of now useless abandoned cars fried by the electromagnetic pulse, the face of the city had been altered so dramatically that to go even a half mile through the wreckage was enough to become completely lost. Without the city's light pollution casting its usual foggy glow, if any of us scouted at night, we had to rely on distant lights from military convoys. I cast a quick glance around, pressing a hand against my jacket pocket to make sure the flashlight and service pistol were still there. Both were courtesy of one Private Morales and would only be used in absolute emergency. I wasn't letting anyone pick me up, spot me running through the dark. I had to get back to base. An hour ago, Private Morales had the unfortunate luck to cross into my path, coming off her patrol of the freeway alone. I'd been there since before sunrise, positioned behind an overturned car, watching the elevated roadway shimmering like an electric current under a constant flood of artificial light. Every hour, I'd counted the number of tiny uniformed figures moving along the section nearest to me, weaving in and out of the trucks and Humvees lined up bumper to bumper like a secondary barrier. My muscles cramped, but I fought the urge to wait it out somewhere else. It had been more than worth it. One soldier had been enough to arm me not only with the tools I needed to return to base safely, but also with the knowledge of how we could finally, get the hell out of this damn city. I looked back and forth twice before climbing over the fallen heap of brick that had once been the face of a bank branch, and and let out a hiss of pain between my teeth as the side of my hand scraped on something jagged. I kicked the object, a metal C that had fallen from its logo, in irritation, and immediately regretted it. The clattering and grating noise bounced off the nearby buildings, almost masking the faint voices and shuffling steps. I threw myself into what was left of the building's interior, dropping down into a crouch behind the nearest stable wall.
Clear! Clear!
Twisting around, I watched the progress of the soldiers moving along the other side of the street. I counted helmets, 12, as they broke off to investigate the different smashed glass entryways of office buildings and stores. Cover. I looked around, quickly taking stock of the overturned, singed furniture, my body moving toward one of the dark wood desks and sliding beneath it. The scrape of loose debris against the outside sidewalk overpowered the sound of my own ragged breathing. I stayed where I was, nose burning with the smell of smoke and ash and gasoline, tracking the voices until they faded. Anxiety kept a grip on my stomach as I edged my way out from under the desk and along the floor toward the entrance. I could still see the patrol unit weaving through the wreckage halfway down the avenue, but I couldn't wait, not even a few minutes longer. When I'd dug through the soldiers' memories, stitched together the information I needed, it felt like a block of cement had finally rolled off my chest. She'd shown me the gaps in the freeway's defenses as surely as if she'd handed me a map and marked them in thick, black strokes. After that, it had just been a matter of washing myself out of her memory. I knew the former Children's League agents would be pissed that this had actually worked. Nothing they tried themselves had succeeded, and in the meantime, the hauls from their food scouting had dwindled. Cole had pushed and pushed them to let me try, but the other agents only agreed on the condition that I go alone to avoid any additional risks of capture. We'd already lost two agents who'd been careless while walking out in the city. I wasn't careless, but I was getting desperate. It was time to make a move now, or the military would starve us out of hiding. The U.S. Army and National Guard had created a virtual barrier around downtown Los Angeles using the elaborate freeway system. The snaking cement monsters formed a tight circle around the inner city, choking us off from the outside world. The 101 was to the north and east, the I-10 to the south, and the 110 to the west. We might have had a chance of escaping if we'd left immediately after climbing back up to the surface from the wreckage of HQ, but there was that word that Chubbs always used, shell-shocked. He said it was amazing any of us were capable of movement at all. I should have. I should have forced us to go instead of falling apart at the seams. I should have, if I hadn't been thinking about his face trapped down in the dark. I pressed the back of my hand against my eyes, steeling myself against the nausea and stabbing pain in my skull. Think about anything else. Anything. These headaches were unbearable, so much worse than the ones I used to have after trying to control my abilities. I couldn't stop. I pushed through the hollow feeling in my legs to a steady jog. I felt the ache of exhaustion at the back of my throat, the heaviness of my eyelids, but adrenaline kept me moving, even as parts of me felt like they were on the verge of shutting down. I couldn't remember the last time I'd fallen into a deep enough sleep to escape the waking nightmare around us. The roads were blistered with peeling asphalt, strewn with piles of cement the army had yet to clear. Here and there I passed bright dots of color, a red high heel, a purse, someone's bike, all dropped and forgotten. Some objects had blown out of nearby windows. The heat from the nearby blasts had charred them black. The wastefulness of the destruction was sickening. As I ran across the next intersection, I stole a look up Olive Street, my eyes drawn to the glowing field of light that was Pershing Square, three avenues over. The former park had been transformed into an internment camp, hastily thrown together while the rubble of the city still smoldered. The poor people inside its fences had been working in the nearby buildings when President Gray launched his attack against the Children's League and the Federal Coalition, the small band of former politicians united against him. He'd supposedly retaliated because one or both parties had played a role in his most recent assassination attempt. We'd kept watch on each of these camps, searching for Kate and the others, watching as the numbers inside swelled as more and more civilians were picked up and held against their will. But no Kate. If she and the agents who left HQ before the attack hadn't made it out of the city, they were hiding themselves so well that we couldn't find them, not even with our emergency contact procedures. Another small military convoy. The buzz of radios and growling tires tipped me off 2 blocks in advance. I bit back a noise of frustration as I took cover behind the shell of an SUV until the soldiers passed me by, their boots kicking up a cloud of chalky gray dust. I stood up, brushed myself off, and started running. We, the League or whatever was left of us, moved locations every few days, never staying in one warehouse long. When we ventured out to find food and water or went to watch the camps, if there was even a hint of suspicion someone could have followed us back, we moved. It was smart, there was no denying that, but I was starting to lose track of where we were at any given time. The silence, thicker now that I had crossed into the eastern half of the city, was so much more unnerving than the symphony of machine gun fire and weapons discharging that had filled the air close to Pershing Square. My hand clenched around my flashlight, but I still couldn't bring myself to take it out, even as my elbow scraped against the stucco wall I stumbled into. I glanced up at the sky. New moon. Of course. A feeling of unease, the same one that had been perched on my shoulder, whispering dark things in my ear for weeks, became a burning knife in my chest, sinking slowly, tearing everything in its path. I cleared my throat, trying to get the poisonous air out of my lungs. At the next intersection, I forced myself to stop and ducked into an old ATM alcove. "Take a breath," I ordered myself. "A real one." I tried shaking out my arms and hands, but the heaviness remained. Closing my eyes, I listened to a distant helicopter slice through the air, moving at a furious pace. Instinct. Insistent, baiting instinct was nudging me to swing an early right on Bay Street, not stay on Alameda Street until I hit its intersection with 7th Street. The latter was a more direct route to our current base on Jesse Street and Santa Fe Avenue, the quickest way to give the others the details, form a plan, and get out. But if someone were watching or tracking me, I'd be able to lose them on 7th Street. My feet took charge and pushed me east toward the Los Angeles River. I got a block and a half before I saw the shadows moving up Mateo Street toward 7th Street. My punishing pace came to an abrupt stop. My hands flew out to catch myself against a mailbox before I spilled out into the middle of the street. A sharp breath blew out of me. Too close. This is what happened when I didn't take the time to slow down and actually make sure the street was clear. I felt the echo of my racing pulse behind my temples and reached up to rub them. Something warm and sticky smeared against my forehead, but I just couldn't bring myself to care. I kept my head and body low as I moved, trying to see which direction the troops were headed in now. They were already way too close to our base. If I doubled back, I might be able to outrun them to the warehouse and warn the others to bail. But they had just stopped. At the corner of the intersection, they'd walked right up to the smashed-in facade of some kind of hardware store and stepped over the busted windows and into the building. I heard a laugh, voices, and my blood slowed to a crawl in my veins. They weren't soldiers. I moved up the street toward the store, running a hand along the side of the building until I reached the windows and dropped down into a crouch.
"Where did you find this?"
"Good shit, man."
More laughter.
Oh, God, I never thought I'd be so damn happy to see bagels.
I looked over the ledge. Inside, three of our agents, Ferguson, Gates, and Sen, were hunkered down, a small spread of food in front of them. Gates, a former Navy SEAL, tore into a bag of potato chips so hard he nearly split it in half. They have food. I couldn't get my head around it. They're eating food here. The disbelief was so numbing, I had to work it through one thought at a time. They aren't bringing the food back for the rest of us. Was this what was happening each time a group went out? The agents had been so insistent on going to scout for supplies themselves. I'd assumed it was because they were afraid if any of the kids got picked up, they'd immediately rat out the group's current location. But was this the real reason? So they'd get first dibs on whatever they turned up? A cold, icy fury turned my fingers into claws. My broken nails cut into my palms. The sting of pain only added to the churning in my stomach.
God, that's good, Sen said. She was a beast of a woman, tall with muscles packed under taut, leathery skin. There was always this expression on her face like she knew where all the bodies were buried because she'd put them there herself.
When she deigned to speak to any of us kids, it was to bark at us to shut up. I waited through the silence that followed, anger flaring with each second.
We should get back, Ferguson said, starting to rise. They're fine. Even if Stewart beats us back, Reynolds is there to make sure he's not shooting his mouth off again. I'm more worried about
the leech, Gates supplied with a belly laugh.
She'll be the last one in, if she even makes it back.
My brows went right up at that. Leech? Me. That was a new one. I'd been called so many worse things. The only part I found offensive was the idea that I couldn't handle a trip back and forth across the city without getting caught.
She's far more valuable than the others, Ferguson argued. It's just a matter of...
It's not a matter of anything. She doesn't obey us, and it makes her a liability. Liability? I pressed a fist against my mouth to keep the bile down. I knew how the League handled liabilities. I also knew how I would handle any agent who tried. Sen leaned back, bracing her hands on the tile.
The plan stays the same, regardless.
Good! Gates balled up the bag of chips he'd just demolished.
How much of this are we bringing back? I could go for another bagel.
A tub of pretzel sticks and a bag of hot dog buns. That's what they were bringing back for 17 kids and the handful of agents that had been stuck behind babysitting while the others went out to collect food and intel. When they started to climb back onto their feet, I flattened myself against the building, waiting for them to step through the window and glance each way down the intersection. My hands were still clenched when I stood and started trailing them, keeping a good half block between us until the warehouse finally came into view. Before they crossed that final street, Sen held a lighter up above her head, a single flame that the agent posted on the roof could see. There was a faint whistle in response, the signal to approach. I ran, closing the last bit of distance before the woman could start climbing up the fire escape after the others.
Agent Sen!
My voice was a harsh whisper. The woman's head swung around, one hand on the ladder, the other reaching for the handgun tucked into the holster of her combat gear. It took me a moment to realize I'd had my own hand clenched around the gun in my jacket pocket the whole time I'd been stalking them down the street.
What?
She snapped, waving to Gates and Ferguson to continue up the fire escape. Not happy to see me, are you?
I have to tell you something. It's...
I hoped she'd think the trembling quality in my voice was fear, not anger on the verge of exploding.
I don't trust Cole with this.
That had her interested. Her teeth flashed in the dark.
What is it?
She asked. This time, I smiled, and when I slammed into her mind, I didn't care if it broke apart. I ripped through memories of bunks, training, HQ, agents, tossing the images aside faster than they could solidify in my mind. I felt her jerk, tremble under the force of my attack. I knew when I had what I was looking for. She had imagined it so vividly, plotted it all out with a malicious efficiency that even I'd underestimated. Everything about the idea had an unnatural luster to it, like warmed wax. Cars dripped into the scene. Faces I recognized as belonging to the kids upstairs were half hidden by gags. Dust-colored military fatigues, black uniforms. A trade. I was gasping for air by the time I surfaced, unable to get oxygen into my chest deeply enough. I had just enough thought to twist her memory, to plant a false one in the place of the last few minutes. I didn't wait for her to recover, pushing past her to get to the ladder. Cole. My mind was firing too fast, black fading into my vision. I have to tell Cole. And I had to get away from the agent before I gave in to the terrifyingly real temptation to put a bullet in her right here and right now. Because it wasn't enough for her to withhold food, to levy threats about leaving us behind if we weren't quieter, didn't move faster, didn't keep up with the rest of them. She wanted to be done with us once and for all, to hand our leashes off to the one group she thought could actually control us. And she wanted the reward money we'd bring in to fund her next strike. 2. By the time I reached the second level of the warehouse, my chest was on fire and my head was a tangle of dark thoughts and dread. The fire escape rattled as Sen started climbing after me, and I couldn't get through the window, away from her, fast enough. Brushing aside the dark ops jacket they'd hung up to block the weak interior light from the street, I slid my legs over the ledge and dropped inside. My eyes frantically jumped from one flickering puddle of candlelight to another, skipping over the dark spaces in between. Every single kid seemed to be huddled in the far corner of the room, as if Gates and Ferguson had backed them into it in exchange for food. No coal, I thought, raking a hand back through my hair. Damn it! I needed him. He had to know. We had to figure this out.
A little appreciation would go a long way,
Gates sneered. It was like his words had disturbed a thick layer of dust in the silent room. Voices immediately floated up in quiet, quick thanks before the kids settled themselves back down again, eyes only on the floor or each other. I saw now what I hadn't wanted to admit to myself before. In the end, all of the months, years we'd spent training with the agents and fighting alongside them, it all came to nothing the second they convinced themselves we were checks waiting to be cashed in. I found the three faces I was looking for. Vida was back from her own scouting, a nasty cut marring her deep bronze skin, which Chubbs was trying to bandage. Next to him was a black backpack. I bit my lip, trying to keep the relief I felt to myself. Inside was the research I'd rescued from Clancy's attempt to incinerate it, the sheets of graphs and charts and medical gibberish his mother had put together in her search for a cure for IAAN.
Granny, I swear to God, if you don't lay off the fucking fussing,
Vida hissed.
Let me just disinfect it,
I heard him protest. Liam sat with his back against the wall, knees up, arms resting on them. He was watching Gates out of the corner of his eye with the same hard expression he'd had ever since the attack. He didn't reach for the food, but simply passed it on to Chubbs when it came into his hands. The agents would turn them in, too. What if I hadn't seen those agents tonight, stopped and actually listened to what Sen and the others were saying? They were going to blindside us with it, set the deal up in advance over the next few days. There wouldn't have been time for me to do anything. Why did I think I could protect all of them? I couldn't even protect one kid, not when it mattered most. Jude. Sen knocked against my shoulder as she swept into the room behind me. I barely felt it. I was above ground, I knew it, but it didn't matter. Right now, I was in a tunnel, blindly squeezing my way through the collapsed walls threatening to crush us. chased by distant screams, unseeing eyes, and the roar of cement splintering, earth pouring down, smothering everything in its path. The face floating in front of my closed eyes was freckled, his doe brown eyes wide as he watched his own life end. I saw all of those things, and nothing stopped them. No good memory was strong enough to wipe away how I imagined it must have been, how Jude had slipped away forever in the dark. I felt myself disconnect. Every nerve in my body lit up. Every part inside of me was racing, picking up speed. The pressure inside of me built until I was sure I was going to be crushed by it, and the thought that everyone around me would witness it made everything 10 times worse. The touch at my waist was gentle enough that I didn't register it at first, but steady enough to turn me toward the door, strong enough even to keep me upright when my knees buckled at that first step. Outside of the shrinking room, the hallway was at least 10 degrees cooler, quiet and dark enough that my skin didn't feel like it was bubbling up at the touch of fire in my veins. I only went a few steps down the hall, just enough to be out of the line of sight from the door, before I was carefully lowered down and maneuvered so my head was between my knees. Familiar hands slid the jacket off my shoulders, lifted my hair away from the sweat drenching the back of my neck.
"You're okay, darling,"
Liam's voice was saying. Something cool touched my neck. A bottle of cold water, maybe?
"Just take a deep breath."
I can't, I said between shallow gasps.
"Of course you can,"
he said calmly.
"I have to."
I brought my hands up, clawing at whatever cord was wrapped around my windpipe. Liam took them in one of his own, holding them flat against his chest.
"You don't have to do anything right now,"
he said softly.
"Everything is okay."
"It's not. You have no idea," I wanted to say. A sharp ache pierced my right temple, throbbing harder and harder with each passing second. Touching him did help. I forced myself to match my breathing with the rise and fall of his chest. The cold air worked slowly to untangle the mess of thoughts knotting into a headache at the front of my skull. The pressure eased its grip enough for me to straighten and lean back against the wall. Liam was still crouched down in front of me, blue eyes searching my face. The wrinkles in his brow smoothed out as he released a small breath of his own. He took the water bottle and poured some water on the bandana he'd pulled out of his back pocket. Slowly, tenderly, he wiped the blood and dirt from my hands and face.
"Better?"
I nodded, taking the water bottle for a sip.
"What happened?"
he asked.
"Are you okay?"
I couldn't tell him. He and Chubbs had been planning for days to find a way for us to slip away from the others when the time came to leave the city. What little hate he carried in him was aimed squarely at the agents. If he knew, he'd try to get us to leave tonight. Or worse, he might accidentally tip the agents off. He'd never been able to guard his feelings the way Cole did. They'd read him like the day's newspaper and dispose of him just as quickly to avoid him stirring up the other kids.
"I just got overwhelmed."
"Has it been happening a lot?"
Liam sat cross-legged in front of me.
"God. I didn't want to talk about these attacks either. I couldn't, not even with him. Then I'd have to talk about Jude, about what happened, about everything we hadn't had the time to talk through before things went to hell."
He seemed to sense that, at least.
"You've been gone all day," he said. "I was starting to get worried."
"It took a while to find someone I could use," I said. "I wasn't just out there running around being reckless."
"I didn't say you were,"
Liam said.
"I just wish you had told me you were heading out."
"I didn't think I had to."
"You don't have to. I'm not your keeper. I was scared, okay?"
I said nothing. This was how it was between us now. Together, but not in the way that was important. The way we were only months ago. After I'd betrayed his trust so badly, I wasn't sure it could be like that again. And it didn't help that I could feel myself falling back on the only way I knew how to cope, wrestling with the thoughts inside of my head, trapping them there so they wouldn't infect anyone else. I'd carefully constructed this invisible wall between us, brick by brick, even as I hugged him, gripped his hand in mine, kissed him. It was so selfish. I knew it was, to take even that much when I wasn't giving everything back to him. But I needed him here. I needed the presence of him at my back, at my side. I needed to see his face and hear his voice and know that he was safe and I could protect him. That was the only way to get through each day. But it was impossible to clamp down or compartmentalize things around Liam. He was a talker. He felt things more deeply than anyone I'd ever met. He'd been trying to start these conversations with me for days. You aren't responsible for what happened to Jude. About what happened in the safe house.
Ruby, seriously, what happened?
He asked, his hands loose around my wrists. Sorry, I whispered, because what else could I say? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be so... I didn't mean to bite your head off. Nothing's going on. I should have told you, but I had to leave in a hurry. And I knew you'd try to tell me it was too dangerous, and I didn't want to argue. But I got what we needed. I know how to get us out of here. His lips compressed into a tight line as he studied me. Liam didn't seem satisfied in the least with that answer, but he was all too willing to drop the topic in favor of another one.
Does that mean we can finally talk about what comes next?
Cole isn't going to let us go. Especially not you.
We could look for my parents.
Isn't it just as dangerous to drive around aimlessly looking for your mom and Harry as it is to stay with the others? I asked. This is our fight. What we wanted all along, remember? Cole made a deal with me that we'd actually focus on helping kids now, freeing the camps. At least it was what we had wanted while we were at East River. Liam had been the one behind the wheel then, steering us all in the direction of getting the kids out of the rehabilitation programs. Maybe it was foolish of me to hope that what had happened there wouldn't affect his dream. But sure enough, his eyes drifted over to the door down the hall that only Cole and I were allowed to enter, to the monster waiting inside.
Cole says that now, and the agents might be playing nice for once.
Liam said.
But how long before they're back to their own agendas?
I tried not to wince. Sooner than you think. This isn't the league anymore.
Exactly. It could be worse.
Not if we're here to keep it from becoming that, I said. Can we at least give it a little while? See what happens? If things head south, we can get out, I promise. If nothing else, I have to see if Kate and the others made it. If they did, they'll be waiting for us. She has the flash drive of Lita Corp's research on the cause of IAAN. If we can put that information together with the cure, we won't just be helping ourselves. We'll be helping every kid that comes after us. He shook his head.
I don't want to make you feel like it was all for nothing, but what if there isn't anything useful in the pages you fished out of the fire? For all the sense we can make of them, you could shred them tonight and it still wouldn't make a difference to our lives. I don't want us to just attach ourselves to the idea of them in the hope that one day down the road it'll make sense.
Objectively, I knew that what he was saying was true, but the words sparked such a fierce denial and fury in me, I almost pushed him away. I didn't need reality right now. I needed hope. That I'd be able to look at the singed pages and see beyond the familiar words. Project Snowfall. IAAN. The Professor. Giving up that last bit of hope would mean the fleeting moment of besting Clancy hadn't been a small moment of victory at all. It would mean, in the end, he had still won. He'd survived HQ's destruction, and the information he'd fought so hard to bury from us would be useless. We needed this. I needed this. My family's faces bloomed in my mind, the sun at their backs. Just as quickly, the image was gone, replaced by another. Sam, the shadows of Cabin 27 hollowing her cheeks as she faded like a ghost. It became an endless parade of all of their faces, the ones I'd left behind the electric fence at Thurmond. My fingers dug into the top of my thighs, twisting the fabric there until I was sure it would rip. The awful truth was, no matter how much I denied it to myself, there was crucial information missing, and the only person in possession of it was the one person Clancy had ensured we'd never find, his mother, Lillian Gray.
"I'm not giving up,"
Liam said, a fierceness in his voice. "If this doesn't work out, we'll find something that does." I reached up to brush my fingers along his cheek, stroking the rough stubble growing in. He sighed, but didn't argue.
"I don't want to fight,"
I said quietly. "I never want to fight with you."
"Then don't. It's that simple, darling."
He leaned his forehead against mine.
"But we have to decide these things together, the important stuff. Promise me?"
"Promise," I whispered. "But we're going to the ranch. We have to." Before HQ was constructed, the League had operated out of Northern California at a base that had been affectionately codenamed the Ranch. The location itself was fiercely guarded now, appropriate given its status as a last resort base to fall back to in the event of an emergency. Only the senior agents, Cole included, had been around during that time and actually knew how to find it. If Kate had made it out, she'd be waiting there. I could see her in my mind, pacing along an empty hallway, as if expecting us to walk through the door at any moment. She wouldn't go against protocol. By now, she'd be out of her head with worry. One thought slipped in, chasing out every hopeful one.
"I'll have to tell her."
Oh, God, why hadn't I thought about that? She wouldn't know. Couldn't. She trusted me. She told me to take care of him. She had no idea that Jude... I closed my eyes, focusing on the way Liam's hand was softly stroking up and down my spine.
"The hell is this?"
Sen's voice whipped out of the room, down the hall, slapping against our private bubble.
"Stuart, you've done a lot of stupid shit, and I mean a lot, but this is... "A stroke of genius?"
Cole said, and I could practically hear the grin in his voice.
"You're welcome."
I was on my feet before Liam could shoot me an exasperated look. "Come on," I said. "Something's going on."
"Yeah, yeah,"
Liam said, putting a hand against my lower back and steering me toward the room.
"When is there not something going on with him?"
The agents had circled around the window so tightly, all I could see was Cole's black knit cap behind their heads. I glanced over to the kids, most of whom were standing, trying to see what was happening.
"Rue?"
My back straightened, and something gripped low in my stomach at the name. I turned toward the direction of Nico's voice.
"Yeah.
Is everything..."
He looked at the agents.
"Is everything okay?"
"What do you think?" I snapped.
Nico flinched at my tone, which somehow only made me angrier. I didn't have an ounce of sympathy left for him. Sad, scared, traitorous Nico. The Greens didn't know what to do with themselves once they realized there was no bringing back any of the electronics, and there was no way for the two yellows we had left to spark them back to life. Nico spent most of his time sleeping, only acknowledging me and Vita with a few words here and there. The pity I'd felt about the way Clancy had manipulated him had evaporated at the simple realization that if Nico had never fed Clancy the information about Project Snowfall and his mother's location, if he hadn't been stupid enough to ask the president's son to track us down, we would never have been in this situation. Jude would be alive, and we wouldn't be trapped in the hellhole that was Los Angeles.
"Ruby,"
Liam started, his voice disapproving. I didn't care. I wasn't here to comfort the kid. I held up my hand as Chubbs and Vita cut through the agents between us, coming to stand next to us, but Chubbs still let out a demanding,
"Are you okay? Were you hurt?"
"No, Gran. She's dying. She's bleeding out at your feet."
Vita rolled her eyes.
"Did you get what you needed?"
"Yes."
"Excuse me for showing concern for my friend,"
Chubbs growled, whirling back on her. I realize that's bound to be a foreign concept to any psychopath.
This psychopath sleeps less than 3 feet away from you, Vida reminded him, her voice all sweetness and light.
Wow, we have such nice friends, Liam murmured.
I'd already disengaged from the conversation. Cole glanced over, his brows raised in a silent question. I nodded, and he turned to look down, to the woman standing beside him. She was middle-aged, olive-toned skin sagging with wrinkles and obvious strain. What must have once been an expensive navy dress had torn at the skirt seam, and her hair hung loosely from a bun, whole sections of it gray with either cement dust or age. Wide, dark eyes scanned the room, catching at the sight of the kids.
"Do you know who this is?"
Cole demanded.
"A civilian who can now identify all of us and report back to the military?"
Sen shot back.
"My name is Annabel Cruz,"
the woman said with a surprising amount of dignity for someone limping around in broken high heels.
"Christ, you meatheads," Cole said when he was greeted with blank looks. "One of California's senators, the Federal Coalition's international liaison. She worked on establishing contacts and negotiating possible support from other nations."
Sen didn't look impressed. She turned on Cole again, her hands on her hips.
"Did you even bother trying to confirm her identity? If she was with the FC, why isn't she in one of the detainment camps?"
"I can speak to that myself," Senator Cruz said, eyes flashing.
"When the attacks began, I was meeting with Amplify outside of our headquarters."
"The underground news org?" Gates asked.
Liam turned to look at me, confused. I explained quietly in as few words as I could. The group had been around for 2 years, maybe three. My take was that it was mostly a collection of reporters and editors who had landed on Gray's shit list for covering dangerous topics like riots and protests, and then had to go into hiding. He opened his mouth, a spark of something in his eyes.
"Which, yes,"
Cole looked at the other agents.
"I realize it says something about her common sense, but..."
"Excuse me?" The senator crossed her arms over her chest.
"He means Amplify doesn't have a good track record of making their stories stick. They get seconds of glory here and there before Gray shuts them down,"
Sen said, assessing the woman again.
"Online, on the social media sites that haven't been blocked yet, quick and dirty pamphlets.
Their reach is too small.
They're getting jack shit done."
This was clearly the one thing Cole and Sen were in agreement on.
"The reporter got trapped with her in the city," Cole told the others. "I was out doing the usual sweeps and heard the military storming a building nearby. They were tracking him, not her. Shot him on the spot, and probably wouldn't have done the same to her if she hadn't identified herself."
"So you swept in, saving the day."
Sen rolled her eyes. The hatred I felt for the woman was starting to overwhelm my better judgment. I felt myself take another step forward.
"And all you succeeded in doing was bringing in another mouth to feed."
"Speaking of..."
Cole slid the stuffed backpack off his shoulder and tossed it to one of the greens.
"Found one of those juice shops, with some decent produce still in their refrigerators. It's not a lot, but better than the crap we've been eating."
The girl looked like he'd just handed her a birthday cake he'd personally baked and frosted. Chubbs was over there and unzipping it so quickly, I think he must have teleported. The others fell in behind him, thanking Cole, trying to pass a whole apple back to him.
"I'm good. Thanks, though."
When he turned back to Sen, his smile was still there, broadening under her look of utter contempt. But I could see something dangerous in his stillness, the way he cocked his head to the right. It was like a match waiting to be struck against something just slightly rougher.
"I'm a little surprised, Sen. I would have thought you'd be ecstatic to have someone like this on the team. Once we get out of here, she'll be incredibly useful in helping us connect what we're doing to the rest of the world,"
he said finally, his tone light.
"We're turning over a new leaf, aren't we?"
"Yeah, well, Sen had no interest in connecting us to the world. She wanted to burn it down around us. Still, there had been a question buried in his words, a challenge. The longer this went on, the more the other agents began to shuffle their feet, steal glances at one another. Some of the Greens, the fast thinkers, were clearly reading into this more deeply than the others, who seemed content to chalk the familiar tension up to the usual frustrations. He knows. Awareness prickled at the back of my mind. Cole might not have known the full details, but he must have had a sense they'd go back on their word to help us free the camps. He was baiting her, trying to get her to admit it in front of the kids.
"I'd be happy to discuss my ideas with you," Senator Cruz said, "provided we have a way out of the city."
The room's attention swung to me.
"Yes, it's like we thought. They don't have enough manpower to be patrolling the streets and guarding so many miles of freeway. They've set up a few stretches that, at night, are just empty vehicles and floodlights."
I walked over to the driving map of Los Angeles we'd pinned to the wall after finding it in a nearby car. I pointed out the three spots I'd seen in the soldier's mind, proud of how steady my voice was as shadowy images started creeping in at the corner of my mind. PSFs. The red-stitched psi symbols. Zip ties. Muzzle. Money. Guns. I couldn't look at any of the agents. Now that I knew what they really wanted, how they were going to repay me for getting their asses out of this city, a dark little voice at the back of my mind started whispering, "Lie." It wanted me to leave out a few key details, let them brush close enough to danger to get bruised.
"Here," Cole said, passing me a pen. "Mark them for us."
Gates muttered something under his breath, and I turned toward him, crossing my arms over my chest, meeting his gaze dead on. He looked away immediately, playing it off as he wiped his mouth and nose against his sleeve. That flicker of fear I saw in his expression was better for my confidence than the steadying hand that Cole dropped on my head as he leaned over my shoulder to study the marks I made.
"I'm sure there are more," I said, "but these were the only ones I saw."
Cole glanced around the room, silently calculating how many there would be per group if we only had three potential exits. 17 kids, 24 agents, down 20 from the group that had come to liberate HQ. 5 had died in the initial attack, and the rest had deserted. 8 groups of 5 or so. It was doable.
"It'll have to be quick and timed exactly right," Sen said. "It could be hundreds of miles before we reach an area the EMP didn't affect, all on foot."
"They had it marked on the map I saw," I said, uncapping the pen again and sketching out the area for them. "Beverly Hills to the west, Monterey Park to the east, Glendale to the north, and Compton to the south. All in all, not a huge area, at least much smaller than I'd expected."
"We'll assign teams tonight and head out in a few hours. 3 or 4 a.m.?
"We need to talk our strategy through," Gates protested. "Gather supplies."
"No, what we need is to get the hell out of this city," Cole said, "as quickly as possible. The others are waiting for us at the ranch."
I gripped his wrist, eyes flicking toward the door. He gave me a slight nod before shifting his focus back onto the room.
"Y'all need to hit the sack ASAP because we're rolling out in a few hours." "Yeah, that's right, Blair," he said, turning toward one of the younger Green girls who actually gasped. "That's what I like to hear. Excitement. We have a change of scenery coming our way."
"You can't make a decision like that without the rest of us having a say," Sen interrupted.
"You don't make the call."
"You know what?"
Cole said.
"I think I just did. Anyone got a problem with that?"
The room was silent. The kids shook their heads, but the agents were a gallery of grim, tight expressions. No one spoke up, though.
"What about the people in the detention camps?" Senator Cruz asked, making her way over to us to study the map for herself. "We just leave them to their own fates? I'd rather stay here and..."
"Get yourself caught and put on one of those trials?" Cole cut in. "You said you were in the middle of a big negotiation with world leaders. Why would you want to table that discussion when seeing it through will help everyone? unless you were lying about it.
I wasn't lying, she shot back, dark eyes flashing. Those people are my friends and colleagues. We've risked our lives trying to right this country.
People will know what happened here,
Cole promised.
They won't be left for long. I'm going to make sure of it, and you're going to help me.
The conversation shifted then, moving toward strategy, the right way to break the groups up, and which surface street routes to take up north.
Everyone good?
Cole asked the clusters of kids, slowly working his way toward the door. His eyes jumped back to me as he continued.
Everyone get enough to eat?
There was a chorus of yas. They were lying, of course. I wondered if they thought the truth would disappoint him, or if it would send him back out again. Even if you were to subtract Cole's ability to charm a cat into giving up its fur coat, he still would have won them over, by virtue of just acting like he cared.
I still want in on that Crazy Eights tournament,
he added, pointing at one of the green boys as he passed.
I'm coming for that crown, Sean. Watch yourself.
He snorted.
Keep trying, old man. Let's see if you can keep up.
Cole mimed like he'd been shot clean through the heart.
A bunch of whippersnappers. I could teach you a thing or two about winning. Or what the rest of us would call cheating.
Liam called over from where he, Chubbs, and Vida had posted themselves by the window, talking quietly with Nico and another green. My eyes darted from their backs to their hands to their feet. Where is it?
Which is why he always lost,
Cole told the others with a wink. The agents had migrated to the other side of the room to be closer to the map to, I assume, make their own plans. Whatever Senator Cruz was trying to tell them, they ignored her. Where's the backpack? I circled back around the kids who were blocking me, searching the ground, and found it slung over Ferguson's shoulder. The temperature in my body shot up 5 degrees, and I knew, just like that, if I wanted the cure's research in my hands again, I was going to have to force them. I would need to compel each and every one of them to hand it over. Cole reached the door to the hall and tilted his head. I waited a minute longer before following him. If the agents noticed, they just didn't care. I'd given them everything they needed to see their plan through, hadn't I? The hallway was still a good 10 degrees cooler than the room was. Once I was outside of the dim glow escaping through the open door, I could barely see a few feet in front of me. I wished for a second that I had grabbed my stolen flashlight, but this seemed like a conversation best suited for shadows. Stripped of everything but its concrete and colorful piping, this building was like a tomb. Even the air inside was stale. I counted 100 paces off in my head, sure I was nearing the end of the hall, when a hand reached out of the darkness and grabbed me. I was pulled inside a small, tight space. A closet? My heart was still fluttering when the door clicked shut behind me.
So, Jim, Cole began. Busy night, huh?
The only way I'd been able to keep myself mostly together these past 2 weeks had been to screw a lid down over every terrifying impulse of emotion that tried to bubble up. Now, though, I'd been shaken so badly that it was only a matter of time before I exploded. I just wished it wasn't now, and that it didn't come in the form of gasping tears. I couldn't get a word out.
Jim, Jesus.
Cole put a hand on my shoulder, steadying me as he snapped his fingers. A flame flickered at the tip of them, filling the cramped space with light.
I was coming back, I managed to squeeze out. I overheard Sen and the others. They aren't going to. We aren't going to the ranch. I looked in her head and they're going to. They're going to.
Take it from the beginning, Cole said. Go slow. Tell me everything you heard the agent say. What you saw.
I repeated it word for word. I told him about how they were going to take one or two of us kids in each car with them, how they planned to wait until we were an hour or two outside of the city before subduing each kid. The exchange of flesh and bone for blood money. The guns they'd buy, the explosives they'd set. They were going after Gray, where they assumed he'd be stupid enough to be, the newly rebuilt Washington, D.C. Cole's expression was shuttered, closed off in a way that Liam never could manage. If I hadn't seen his hand spasm, I wouldn't have known he was furious until he spoke. For a long time, though, he said nothing at all. I felt a trickle of sweat run down my face and was tempted, for a moment, to open the door and let the cool air in. Finally, he said,
"I'll handle it."
"We will handle it. But you have to decide," I told him. "Right now, you can't keep running down the middle, trying to have a foot on both sides of the line. Decide if you're with us or you're with them."
"Of course I'm with you,"
he said sharply, looking pissed that I'd suggested otherwise.
"You know I... this affects me, too. I made you a promise back in Los Angeles, didn't I? You trying to make me out to be a liar?"
"No, I just..." I sucked in a deep breath. "You won't tell the others what you are. You won't even tell Liam. You haven't looked at the cure research since that first night."
"Oh, gee. Could it be because I'm trying not to draw attention to the fact that I have a personal investment in getting rid of certain delightful freak powers?"
He let the flame go out for a moment and then relit it for emphasis.
"I can't show interest in something without the other agents wondering why, or without them wanting it more, just because I do. It's a game I've had to play for years."
"This is not a game. No part of it is," I said. "They won't give the research back now."
"I am well aware of that, and I've taken precautions. Their names are Blair and Sarah."
The two girls were greens, with photographic memories. "You gave it to them to memorize?"
"I tested them. Had each reproduce a diagram and chart, and they nailed it. I think we should let the agents keep the backpack. It'll help sell what we're trying to do," he said.
I kept my back straight and looked just past his head where I wouldn't have to both listen to the southern drawl and see that smile, the patented Stuart charm assault.
"I have an idea, but I also have a feeling you aren't going to like it."
"Way to set it up for me."
"I'm serious now, Jim. This has to be between you and me, understand? It won't work otherwise. Promise me. It's the only way to get rid of them before they get rid of us."
Cole offered a hand, and I hesitated before taking it. I held it long enough to feel the natural, innate heat of him warm the air around us. Clancy had told me once that there had to be a natural hierarchy of people with psi abilities, that those with the most power should be leading the others, simply because there wasn't anyone else powerful enough to question them. And now, holding Cole's hand, I saw that was true, but for a different reason. We were the ones who saw the full spectrum of everything right and wrong with the abilities we'd been given. We'd been feared and hated, and we'd feared and hated ourselves. Neither of us wanted what we had. We'd never try to keep our powers or abuse our position for absolutely longer than we had to. And on a basic level, the ones with the most power had to be out front, if only because we'd have the best shot at protecting the others. I squeezed his hand. A look of relief and gratitude passed over his features before he could steady them back into his usual look of arrogant nonchalance. "What's our next step, then?" I asked. "How are we going to accomplish anything without trained forces? Where are we going to go?"
"We are going to the ranch," Cole said. "They are going to Kansas HQ with the rest of the agents. They get to wash their hands of us, but they don't get the damn ranch. That is ours."
"How are you going to manage that?" I said.
"Jim, the better question is, how long is it going to take you to convince them that the ranch is, run down, stripped of anything useful, indefensible?"
Understanding froze me at my center. "You want me to influence them? There are over a dozen agents."
"And you have 3 hours before we leave,"
Cole said, letting his flame go out again.
"So I would suggest working fast."
3. In the scramble leading up to our departure, everyone had different tasks to attend to. Some were sent to relieve the others on watch, some packed up the spare gear we'd accumulated. Others, like Liam and Chubbs, divvied up the last bit of food between the different teams. I moved between the agents like an unexpected breeze, brushing up against their minds just as softly. Cole and I had decided the order I should work in to make the shift in plan seem the most natural, which meant starting with Agent Sen. I stood behind her, back to back, as she studied the map and made adjustments to the initial lists of who was driving with who. Having opened her mind once meant the second trip in was easier than fitting a key into a greased lock. With each agent, I started to feel myself slowing down more and more, forced to fight through scenes of bleak violence, training, dreams. I'd spent 6 months with these people, but it took me less than 2 hours to finally understand the trajectory of their hatred, for Gray, for us, for everything that stood in their way. There was so much aching loss between them, they created a black hole that sucked one another in. When I finished, I felt like a rock that had survived a landslide, steady enough to go 3 doors down the hall to deal with Clancy Gray. I nudged his side with my foot, a bit harder than I maybe needed to. "Wake up." He groaned, eyes bleary, as I shone the flashlight directly into his face. "If this chat doesn't involve cutting my hands free, a mirror, either of the Stewart brothers' messy and untimely deaths, or a clean pair of clothes, I'm not interested." I hooked my heel over his arm, forcing him to roll onto his back. He glowered up at me through the dark fringe that hung over his eyes in spikes. The slime from the sewers he'd taken to escape HQ had faded from a sickly-looking black to a dry, crusty gray that flaked off him when he so much as cocked a brow. "No food," he snorted. "Using deprivation as torture is so direct." "This isn't torture," I said, rolling my eyes, "at least not in the traditional sense. I don't know that Clancy was all that bothered that we kept him separate from the others, in a kind of solitary confinement. I think what bothered him was that he was being blocked from information, only able to catch snatches of conversation through the wall. That was Clancy Gray's perfect hell. That and the filthy clothes that stuck to his skin in odd places." I held up the sweatpants and t-shirt and dropped them onto his face. "I'm going to cut your hands and feet free, and I'm going to give you a rag and bucket of water to clean yourself up with. And then you are going to come quietly and do exactly as I say." I used the small knife Cole had given me to cut the zip tie around his ankles, ignoring the welts circling the skin there. "What's going on?" he asked, sitting up. "What are you doing?"
"We're moving."
"Where?" Clancy asked, rubbing his wrists once they were free, too. "I heard there's an old meat locker a few blocks away. That would be an upgrade." I turned my back as he stripped down, throwing the rag back over my shoulder in his general direction. I kept my eyes focused on the floor, listening to him scrub himself down. "Of course it would be too much to ask for warm water," he groused. "I don't even get a blanket." He stopped moving. I heard the rag slop against the tile floor and glanced back over my shoulder, keeping my gaze above his bare shoulders. His eyes were narrowed at me, clearly working a thought through. "What's really going on?"
"We're moving," I repeated, fighting back the usual swell of disgust.
"He didn't get information. He didn't get anything other than the little he didn't even deserve." When I didn't elaborate, I felt the tickling sensation at the back of my skull as his mind casually tried to bump up against mine, as if knocking to get in. I shut it down, picturing a door slamming in his face. He flinched at the force of it.
"You're going to trade me. Turn me in," he said in a tight voice. "That's why you're getting me all cleaned up."
If it hadn't been so close to what the agents were planning for us, I would have tried torturing him with the possibility. As it was, I didn't have the stomach for it.
"You'd like that, wouldn't you? Bend a few of the PSFs to your will, orchestrate an escape."
"Wow. So you are still capable of speaking sentences that contain more than 3 words." Clancy said, sliding the clean shirt over his head and dragging the sweatpants up, one leg at a time. He looked paler than I remembered, as thin and shadowed as the rest of us.
How are you still so angry?
Don't tell me this is about that stupid kid. I don't remember anything that happened after I landed the first punch on his jaw, only that when I came back to my senses, there were arms locked around my waist and I was still thrashing, trying to break free.
Hey, hey! Cool it!
Cole released me and shoved me away from both him and Clancy.
You're better than that. Get a grip!
I pressed a fist against my chest, gasping for breath. Clancy still had his arms up over his head when Cole lifted him onto his feet, dragged his hands behind his back, and fastened a new zip tie. He jammed an old pillowcase we'd been using as a hood down over him next, knotting it to ensure it'd stay on. Without another word, he dragged me over to the door, anger drawing deep lines in his face.
"I need you focused," he hissed. "We're going to be driving for hours, and he'll be in the car with us the whole time. If he tries something, you have to be the one to shut it down."
I stared at Clancy, taking in the way he angled his head toward us. Who's to say he wasn't trying something right now on Cole? He'd controlled far more people in far worse circumstances. This would be nothing for him. I'd just assumed that physically separating him from the others would be enough to protect them. But what if it wasn't?
"So, we're going for a car ride," he called over.
I searched Cole's face for a hint of Clancy's influence, pushing down the bubble of fear in my chest. His eyes were sharp, not glassy, and there wasn't that blank quality to him. In fact, he was smirking. "Isn't there a way to knock him out?" I murmured. "It would be safer, for all of us."
"Only by force, and I'd rather not run the risk of accidentally giving him a traumatic brain injury."
Then, louder, he added,
"He'll be riding in the trunk, tied up, gagged, helpless. Just the way I like him."
Clancy's head snapped in our direction, and if I didn't know him as well as I did, I could have sworn there was an edge of desperation to his voice.
"Oh, there's no need for any of that. You're not riding in the back seat," Cole said. "It's too risky. What if someone sees you, or you try to escape?"
Clancy scoffed.
"And separate myself from the Project Snowfall research before I can get rid of it?"
Cole shot me a look, tongue caught between his teeth as he grinned. An unexpected bonus of showing it to the Greens? Clancy had no idea we'd taken the precaution of backing the research up, so to speak.
"Ah, now, that does sound reasonable, doesn't it, Jim?"
I pulled him farther into the hallway, shutting the door behind us. "Maybe taking him with us is a bad idea. If he gets loose in the ranch, he could ruin everything." I clenched my hands at my sides, trying to work through the revulsion, the memory of how stupid I had been to ever think I'd had Clancy under my control. Some people came into the world and never once looked up to see the lives around them. They were so focused on what they wanted, what they needed. No one else mattered to them. They disconnected from sympathy and pity and guilt. Some people came into the world as monsters. I understood that now.
"Hey," Cole said quietly, "you think I don't want to strangle the life right out of him, too?"
"He has more faces than a pair of dice," I warned. "If something doesn't benefit him directly, he won't play along. And if it threatens him..."
"He's no match for you, Jem."
"I wish that were the case." I shook my head.
"Let's focus on what he has to offer if we can get him in a place where he wants to work with us," Cole said. "The intel, the insight into how his father thinks, even his value as a potential trade."
"He's too unpredictable." Even if we turned him over to his father, there was still a good chance he could escape and cause even more havoc. Was it better that he came with us, if only so we could keep an eye on him?
"You keep forgetting that, in the end, we want the same thing he does,"
Cole said, clearly fighting the urge to roll his eyes.
"We all want his father out of office."
"No," I said, glancing back in at the figure kneeling on the floor. He wants his father ruined. There's a difference. The only question is if you're willing to risk being part of the fallout when he figures out how to do it. I realized a second too late that resecuring Clancy's hands with a zip tie meant having to feed him myself. He glared and spat at me like a cat furious at having its claws clipped. My skin crawled. All in all, a thoroughly unpleasant experience for everyone. Liam greeted my return to the other room with a sympathetic look and a bag of potato chips, patting the ground next to him. Half of the room looked dazed by the excessively early hour. The other half was pacing in anxious circles. The wind had picked up outside, screaming as it whipped around the edges of the warehouse and passed through the cracks in the roof. It made for an eerily appropriate soundtrack to the morning.
"Okay, I'll make this quick," Cole began. "We'll be splitting into teams and dividing ourselves between the three exit points. If the location you're assigned is compromised in any way, soldiers present, shady-looking folks hanging around, anything, head to the next closest."
Just to the side of him, Sen wore a smug little smile as she surveyed the kid sitting on the floor. I almost smiled myself, a small thrill of control trickling through me. Good riddance, I thought.
"Once you have your assignment," Cole continued, "check it against the map for your car locations and the routes listed next to them. Team A is me, Ruby, Liam, Vida, Nico, our guest, and what's-his-face, the one in the prissy button-down."
Liam threw his hands up in exasperation. Chubbs only shrugged.
"Better than Granny. And, for the record, Chubbs."
"Not Nico," I cut in. He couldn't be trusted to use his judgment around Clancy, and I couldn't be trusted not to make him pay if he slipped again. I saw Nico disappear from the edge of my vision, fading to the back of the group. Liam's hand tightened around mine, but I refused to glance up and meet what I knew was a look of disappointment. He didn't understand.
"Fine," Cole said. "Nico, you'll go with Team D."
"Am I the guest?" I hadn't realized Senator Cruz was in the room until she spoke up.
"You're with Team C. Team A has our less welcome guest."
He must have informed her of Clancy's presence because her only response to that was a soft, "Oh, I see." He ran through the details of each route the teams would be taking upstate. All involved sticking to surface streets, which added on hours and wasted gas, but ensured a safer trip. There was a single moment of silence after he finished speaking, as if everyone needed a moment to absorb his words. Cole pointed at me.
"Go grab him." "Once you have your group," he continued as I exited the room, "go, get the hell out of here. Good luck, and take care of each other. We'll see you up north."
Clancy struggled to his feet as I entered the room, his hands bound, his head still tucked inside the pillowcase.
"We're going now. What time is it?"
I pulled it off him for the moment. "Any sign of you messing with anyone?"
"And I'm dead." "God, you're as annoying as my old nanny." "I understand," Clancy snapped.
He turned around and nudged me with his bound hands.
"This is going to be just as suspicious as the hood. If something happens, I might need to use my hands."
"Nothing is going to happen," I said, hooking my hand around his arm and drawing him out into the hallway, then back into the room to avoid being trampled, as the different teams ran to the building's different exits.
"Ready?"
Cole called to me from the window as I pulled Clancy into the room. Annabelle Cruz was still standing there, huddled between the two agents that were responsible for her. At the sight of Clancy, she froze. He smirked, taking her in from head to toe.
"Enough," I said. "Leave her alone or I'll push you out of the window." "I'd like to request that honor,"
Liam said as he helped me up next. He glanced back toward Sen and shot me a questioning look as the woman adjusted the straps of the backpack containing the cure research. I put a reassuring hand on his arm, then turned back, gripping Clancy's shoulder to steady him as he swung his leg up over the frame. His shoe caught on something and he went tumbling out of my hands, landing headfirst on the fire escape in a disgruntled heap.
I see I'll be afforded no dignity in this, he growled as he straightened up, awkwardly trying to adjust his shirt with his hands bound.
I leaned over the steps, tracking Cole's progress. He was already back on solid ground, a gun in his hands, surveying the nearby windows with a look of focused intensity I'd seen on Liam's face so many times. The wind was tearing at his hair, making his jacket billow out around him. It blew me forward a step.
As far as Stewarts are concerned, he's probably the better choice. Handsome, the bad boy. Seems more your taste,
Clancy reasoned, following my gaze. Clearly, he didn't understand my taste at all. I didn't let myself look back to check on Vida, Chubbs, and Liam until we were down on the street, too, our backs pressed to the building.
Anything? I asked Cole.
He shook his head.
All clear.
We headed one block east to walk along the railroad tracks lining the Los Angeles River. Our exit was approximately 13 blocks north, but those would be 13 dark, silent, and tense blocks. Already, I felt a shiver of anxiety run down my spine as I looked back, but it was too dark to see the group of kids trailing behind us. Cole had warned them to wait 10 minutes before following us through the exit, just on the off chance that something went wrong and they'd need the buffer of distance to run. Nice for them. I kept my gaze ahead and my grip on Clancy's arm firm. His skin felt unbearably warm against my hand. The morning had the city in a chilly grip without the sun there to burn it away, but it was like none of it touched him, like nothing could. Cole's hand shot up as he halted us in place with a sharp intake of breath. Clancy, curious, leaned in over my shoulder to see what the issue was.
Ah, he said, moving away. Good luck with this one.
Our route took us under the 101 freeway, where it formed a bridge over the Los Angeles River and nearby rail tracks. From what I'd seen in the soldiers' memories, the Army had blocked off the tracks below with overturned train cargo cars and floodlights. On the freeway, there'd been two Humvees and more lights pointing in toward us. And there they were. I counted them as we made our careful, silent approach. I didn't see the problem at all. Not until the first of three shadowy figures appeared on the ledge of the freeway's elevated road. Their arms were raised in a way that made me think they must have been peering through binoculars. Cole dropped to his stomach on the tracks. I forced Clancy down with me. Chubbs began to ask,
"What's going on?"
But someone, Vida, muffled him.
"Damn it, damn it, damn it, damn it!"
Fear rippled through me. How did I get this so wrong? It was still pitch black outside, but we had already passed into the faint edge of the floodlight's glow. There was a low curse from Cole as he turned and motioned us back with his hands. Vida pulled out a handgun and shuffled back on her belly, dragging Chubbs with her, a hand knotted in his shirt. The wind kicked up the back of my jacket, exposing my bare skin to the chilling air. To our left, the tin-like sheets of metal lining the tracks were rattling as if they were on the verge of exploding. "Go slow," I coached myself. "Don't panic. Go slow." Sudden movements or loud noises would only draw the soldiers' attention. There was a crack, like broken bone, as a whole section of the wall's metal siding flew off, catching a burst of wind and flinging itself straight toward us. I ducked down, covering my free hand with my head, my brain already calculating how fast we'd have to get up and run once the sheet slammed into the tracks and started banging around. But one pounding heartbeat. Two. Three. With the exception of the wind and my own heavy breathing, there was nothing but quiet. I lifted my head, catching Cole's shocked expression as it morphed into relief, and twisted around to see why. Liam had a hand outstretched in the direction of the huge piece of siding. It was frozen in place where it had struck the ground on its first dangerous bounce and was still angled toward us. The rusted metal stood upright, shaking like a strained muscle, but otherwise still. His face was a stony mask of concentration. I'd seen him lift and throw things much heavier with his abilities, but the force of the wind and our exposure to it was warring with his control. Chubbs shifted, but Liam said quietly,
I have it.
Cole snapped once to get my attention, pointing up at the freeway. The figures we had seen there, the soldiers, were moving again. The floodlights that were trained on us switched off, just as another military truck drove up alongside the two vehicles already posted there. It took me a moment to understand what was actually happening. They're there to swap out the cars and lights, not to patrol, not as lookouts. One of the Humvees rumbled to life, made a wide turn across the empty freeway lanes, and sped west. I kept my eyes on the shrinking taillights before squinting up toward the floodlights again. No movement. Gone. Cole had come to the same conclusion. He rose slowly onto his knees, then his feet, waving for us to do the same. Liam let out one last grunt, using his abilities to lift the metal siding up in an arc over us and throw it in the direction of the Los Angeles River's dry cement bed. He let his brother haul him to his feet, but pushed him away.
For someone who sucks so bad at sports, those were some surprisingly decent reflexes.
That must be thank you in a language I don't speak, Liam said, his jaw set as he turned to look ahead.
Can we get moving?
Cole stared at him a moment longer, his face unreadable.
All right, let's roll.
By the time we reached Glendale on foot, the sun was up and shining over us. The area, despite being outside of the de facto perimeter the military had set up, was still close enough to the damage to have prompted either an official or panic-induced evacuation. There wasn't a soul alive around us. Cole had gone ahead to scout the nearby streets just to be sure, but there was this feeling, an unnatural buzz along my skin, that prevented me from relaxing. I kept my head up, scanning every corner, the nearby roofs, even the horizon of Los Angeles's ruined skyline for its source. What started as a billowing thundercloud of unease was becoming sharper, taking on more distinct edges. I was afraid it wouldn't fully take shape until it was already raining down over us like knives. The dusting of ash and soot out here had been washed into stagnant puddles by the rain a few nights before. I shook my head. It all just seemed strange. The buildings weren't wearing any open wounds, were stained a faint gray, not the menacing black of the inner city. I stepped over the cement block marking a parking space and squinted at the building, a locked-up grocery store.
There,
Cole said, pointing at something past the small shopping center, a parking lot, with its tall street lamps on and flickering.
Thank God,
Chubb said as we crossed from one parking lot into the next. He stared up at the lights like he'd never seen one before. Liam was already moving toward the nearest dark blue sedan, pulling a bent wire coat hanger from the black backpack slung over his shoulder. He jimmied the lock so quickly, Cole didn't even catch on until Liam bent over the driver's seat, pulling out wires from beneath the dashboard, trying to spark some life back into the engine by hot-wiring it.
What?
Chubbs called.
No minivan? Whoa, 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 Cole said as the engine finally sputtered to life.
He pulled Liam out and did something that killed the motor.
Christ, who the hell taught you that?
Who do you think? Liam snapped, ripping his arm out of Cole's hand.
Harry?
Cole let out a disbelieving laugh.
Don't they take away your halo if you teach an impressionable youth how to steal a car?
Liam's look could have peeled the paint off the sedan.
Are you finished? No, I'm just...
Cole was picking at a scab, I realized, and he didn't even know it.
Harry. Harry Boy Scout Troop Leader Stewart taught you.
Why?
Because he trusted me not to abuse it.
Liam turned a bitter smile on him.
What, you didn't get a lesson?
The look Cole shot back was even colder than Liam's words had been. The fingers on his right hand gave a small spasm before he could tuck his hand into the back pocket of his pants.
God, even Stewart family drama is boring,
Clancy said sullenly.
I thought we were in a hurry.
We are. I turned to Liam. Did that car have any gas in it? He nodded.
Enough to get us 100 miles, I'd guess. Grand, Cole said,
Except we're not taking that one. There's a tan SUV over there that has your name on it.
Liam turned, took one look at it, and shook his head.
It's a gas guzzler. They're top-heavy and more likely to roll in an accident.
His brother silenced him by holding up his hand and pressing his fingers together in such a condescending way, it pissed me off, too.
Are you planning on getting into an accident?
Then shut the hell up and do what I tell you.
You don't get to make that call. Yes, I do. I'm in charge here, whether you like it or not. I'm the one that's been out in the field. I'm the one that's going to get us out of here. And I'm the one telling you to pick yourself an SUV in case we have to take it off the road.
Liam took a step forward.
If we have to go off-road, we're pretty much screwed anyway. I'd rather have a car that won't devour gas.
He glanced my way, tilting his head in a silent, back me up. I bit my lip, shaking my head.
Not this fight. This one wasn't worth it.
Cole was making quick strides back in our direction from a nearby red pickup truck, and nothing was going to turn him from it. All those months ago, when it had just been the four of us in a minivan making our way along back roads, siphoning gas from other cars like vultures picking the last stringy pieces of meat off bones, we'd functioned on two simple principles. Move fast, don't get seen. For better or worse, most of our decisions had been gut reactions, and I wasn't about to pretend we hadn't made some questionable choices, but it was the only way we knew how to live and survive. It was how all of us freak kids had to scrape by, whether it was to avoid camps or skip tracers. And looking at Cole now, at the irritation sweeping over his features, it was never more obvious to me that he knew almost nothing about what his brother's life had been like after Liam escaped the League's training program. He was one of us by technicality, but outside of witnessing the cruel treatment of the kids in Lita's psionic research program, he'd never been forced to adapt to our reality. They'd already fought about the driving arrangements earlier that morning, saving us a little time now. I spared one last glance at the three figures piling into Cole's chosen SUV before tugging Clancy in the direction of the red truck Cole gestured to. It felt strange to not have all of us piled into one car, but I understood Cole's reasoning immediately, even if Liam didn't. It was the same reason I'd basically had the sole pleasure of babysitting Clancy over the past 2 weeks, feeding him and dealing with his wounded ego. If I drove, the other orange had less of a chance of commandeering the car because I could block him out. If one of the others was driving, it would only be a matter of time before Clancy slid into their thoughts and took control. I could see it happening as clearly as if the kid had planted the scene in my mind. I would have preferred Cole in the other car, too, but that had been non-negotiable. The fact that it was just as likely for Clancy to hijack his mind and command him to use his gun or knife on me hadn't seemed to occur to him. The gas tank was half full and the engine already hot-wired and running. Cole had snapped Clancy's zip ties off and attached new ones so his hands could both rest in his lap and be hooked through the seatbelt, and his feet could be bound to one of the bars running under the seat. Cole pulled the pillowcase over the kid's head. It was just a matter of taking a deep breath and shifting the truck out of park. I looked up one last time at the skeleton of a city caught in my rearview mirror and tightened my hands on the steering wheel. We were finally leaving that terrible place and what we'd buried there. 20 minutes of driving, however, made a few things crystal clear. The truck didn't have working air conditioning, its owner's body odor had been absorbed into the faux leather seats, and, yes, my window was broken. To my right, Clancy had bent over at the waist and was either sleeping or trying to subtly rub the pillowcase against his legs to pull it off. Cole, just to his right, was scanning the passing streets. The early afternoon light stood out in sharp contrast to the dark smudges beneath his eyes. It was like now that he was still, not rushing around or barking out orders, his body had finally settled into its aches and exhaustion. He rolled his shoulders back against the press of the seatbelt and grimaced. Cole had shown me where we were headed on a map, a town called Lodi, a little ways south of Sacramento. If we'd been able to take the freeway, it would have been a straight shot up the coast, 5 hours max. Less than that, if flights and trains had still been operational, and Gray hadn't ordered ships to patrol the Pacific coast. I looked back over my shoulder to the SUV behind us. Liam must have been waiting for it, because he lifted his hand in a reassuring wave. In the front passenger seat beside him, Chubbs was going on and on about something, his hands waving to emphasize each word. The sight was familiar and comforting enough to almost chase away the strangeness of the city around us. Burbank, California, had been, by all definitions, a city brimming with life and commotion. Its importance had only grown in recent years. So many media companies already had studios or headquarters there, and many of the others in nearby cities had moved as well, either through mergers or deals to share equipment. Seeing the city streets so silent and empty, I wondered if Gray had already swept in to shut the place down. Where the hell is everyone? It was like driving through the worst of the economically ravaged towns back east. I half expected to see an old newspaper dramatically catch the breeze and fly across the street like a tumbleweed. I felt my pulse kick up. The same shadow I'd felt behind us in Los Angeles was back and growling in my head like thunder.
"I don't like this," Cole said, as if sensing my thoughts. "Make your next right."
If I hadn't looked back into the rearview mirror to signal to Liam, I wouldn't have seen it at all. The SUV was there one moment and gone the next. The sound the military Humvee made as it crashed into the Ford Explorer felt like someone took a bat to the back of my skull. I jerked the wheel as the other car rolled once, glass and rubber exploding in every direction as it righted itself again, rocking hard against the sidewalk. I slammed my foot onto the brake pedal, sending the truck into a skid. Clancy choked as his seatbelt snapped tight over his chest. He tried to brace himself with his bound hands against the dashboard.
"What?" he demanded. "What the hell was that?"
But it was Cole I should have been worried about. I was still fighting with my seatbelt when his face, rigid with shock, transformed. The sound that escaped his throat was too ragged, too strangled to be a scream. It didn't sound human at all. He threw his door open, but didn't run toward the military vehicle or the two soldiers who were approaching the tan SUV with their weapons drawn. Cole took one step forward as I jumped down from the truck, and, with no other warning than his right hand tightening into a fist at his side, the Humvee burst into a ball of fire. The wave of pressure that came off the small explosion sent me stumbling back against the truck. It blew out the windows of nearby buildings and the back windshield of our pickup. The two soldiers were thrown onto the street, tackled from behind by the force of it. Cole moved toward them, unnervingly calm. His pistol was drawn out of the holster at his side, aimed with his usual precision. One shot, delivered to the face of the young soldier closest to the SUV. The other found himself hauled up, his helmet ripped away, and Cole's fist slammed again and again into his face. I couldn't watch. Wouldn't. My heart was banging against my ribcage as I ran for the SUV. Shards of tinted glass from the windows crunched underfoot. The driver's side doors had taken the brunt of the impact, but there was movement. Liam's wide eyes met mine through what was left of the windshield.
"Are you okay?"
I called, wincing at the sound of one last gunshot piercing the air. Liam was sitting straight up, his hands clenched in a death-like grip on the steering wheel. His face was drained of all color, save for the red mark stamped across the left side of his face and the rapidly purpling bridge of his swelling nose. The deflated airbags hung limp in his lap.
"Oh my God," I gasped. "You guys..."
Chubbs had already crawled into the back with Vida and was squinting as he examined a gash across her temple. His dark skin had taken on an ashy quality. The burning vehicle was eating up the fresh air around us, sending wave after wave of shimmering heat against my back. The roar of it consuming the metal and glass forced me to shout around the smoke I was already half choking on.
"Okay?"
I called back to them. Vida gave me a thumbs up, swallowing hard, as if she didn't trust herself to speak just yet. Liam? My hands shook like crazy as I tried to work the handle on the front door, the enormous metal indentation popping and protesting. There was so much adrenaline running through me, it was amazing I didn't rip the whole thing off its hinges. Liam? Liam, can you hear me? He turned toward me slowly, coming out of his stupor.
I told him it would roll.
I almost sobbed in relief as I reached through the window and kissed him. You did.
I told him.
You did. I know you did, I said, low and soothing, as I reached in to unbuckle his seatbelt. Are you hurt? Anything feel broken?
Shoulder hurts.
He squeezed his eyes shut, bracing himself against the pain.
Chubbs, everyone. We're okay,
Chubbs called, his voice surprisingly steady despite the congested tone it had taken on. When he turned toward us, I saw blood running down from his nostrils over his lips.
I think his shoulder is dislocated. Ruby, do you see my glasses? I lost them when the airbags inflated.
What happened? Vida asked, pointing at the fire. How did...
Bullet to the gas tank. Lucky shot,
came Cole's voice behind me. They were either too muddled or too terrified to really think the improbability of it through. Cole shouldered me out of the way to get to the door's handle himself. After a moment of hesitation, I ducked around to the passenger side, forced the stubborn door open, and knelt down. I felt along the carpet until my fingers brushed his glasses, or what was left of them.
Did you find them?
He asked.
What's wrong?
I held the mangled frames and cracked but whole lenses up for Vida to see. In a rare moment of sympathy, she gave him a pat on the shoulder and said,
Yeah, she's got them, Gran.
The driver's side door finally came open with a scream of metal against metal. Liam rolled, trying to get his left foot out from where it was pinned under the mangled dashboard. All the while, he clutched his left arm against his side, trying to keep it from being jostled.
Damn it, you stupid kid,
Cole said, emotion simmering just beneath the surface. His right hand twitched and jerked as he reached inside to help his brother.
Damn you, how hard is it to not get yourself killed on my watch? Trying,
Liam said between gritted teeth.
Christ, that hurts! Give me your arm, Cole said. This is going to suck, but... Are you doing it?
Chubbs was asking.
Make sure you're in the proper position.
I don't know what was worse, the sound of Liam's shoulder socket realigning or his howl of pain that followed.
We need to move,
Vida said, kicking the SUV's back door open.
This piece of shit is totaled. We have to get into the bed of the truck, but standing around here crying over each other is going to get us shot, and fast. Glasses?
Chubbs called, holding out his hand in what he must have thought was my direction. Vida took that hand and looped it through her arm, accepting the twisted wire frames from me. I stopped her, just for a second, to make sure that she really was okay. Banged up, bruised, but not bleeding. What a goddamn miracle this was.
Clancy.
I spun back around to face the truck, heart paralyzed for the instant it took to spot his dark outline through the truck's back window.
Shit.
This is how we'd lose him. Chaos. Carelessness. I'd panicked. My mind had just blanked out with terror, and I'd run. I hadn't even thought to take the keys out of the ignition. If Cole hadn't bound his legs, he'd be in the wind by now. Be better than this, I thought, my nails digging into the palms of my hands. You have to be better than this. The adrenaline was slow to leave my system. I couldn't keep from shaking, not entirely.
You know, Granny,
Vida's voice drew my attention back toward them.
You have actually not sucked in this crisis. I can't see your face, so I can't tell how sincere that was,
Chubb said. I slid the backpack fully onto my back, jogging around to where Cole was helping a limping Liam around the bodies of the downed soldiers, toward the truck. I couldn't bring myself to look at them, or assess what Cole had done in his moment of rage. Liam braced his bad arm against his chest. I slid my hand around the small of his back to help steady him, but really, to reassure myself he was fine. Alive. Liam tilted his head toward me and said,
"Kiss me again."
I did, soft and quick, right at the corner of his lips where there was a small white scar. Seeing my expression, he added,
"Saw my life flash before my eyes. Not enough kissing."
Cole snorted, but his whole body was still tense with anger he couldn't release.
"Wow, kid. Unusually smooth for you."
We lifted Liam onto the flatbed, laying him out next to Chubbs, who was clutching the broken remains of his glasses over his heart.
"Aw, damn," Liam said, seeing them. "I'm sorry, buddy."
"Prescription,"
he said in a low, mournful voice.
"They were prescription lenses."
Cole yanked the sheet of electric blue tarp out from under his brother and spread it over them.
"What are you doing?"
Vida demanded, already trying to sit up.
"Stay down and stay covered. We're going to get as far as we can away from here and switch cars. Chances are they radioed this one in."
"I would like to register the fact that this fucking sucks," she said.
"Noted," he said, shutting the gate.
I climbed back up behind the wheel again, soaking in the vibrations from the running engine. Clancy had finally gotten his hood up and off him, and even though I didn't look over, I saw him watching me out of the corner of my eye. For the first time in weeks, the sullen irritation that had coated his every mood was gone, and he was smiling. His gaze shifted away, over to Cole, who slammed his door shut hard enough to rock the whole vehicle. In his lap was what looked like a leather pouch and a pistol that he must have taken off one of the soldiers. They both slid around as his hand continued to jerk, spasm, until he finally tucked it beneath his leg. The sight made my brain think, Mason, red, fire. It plucked at loose threads at the back of my mind until I saw the pattern of how they were woven together. The reds at Thurmond had moved strangely. They lurched when others walked, jabbed when others waved. But I'd just assumed the awkward jerks were because of the restraints the PSFs kept them in. But Mason? The kids in Nashville, they'd called him Twitch. Twitch, because of the way his whole body spasmed with its strange rhythm. I thought, I don't know that I'd even really thought about why. I'd just assumed it had something to do with the way he was trained, the way the government had broken his mind trying to mold him into the perfect soldier. All of them. All of the Reds. They all must have had some version of this physical tick. And if I was able to recognize it after only being around a few of them, then how could someone who had been there to make suggestions for and contribute to and witness the training miss the signs?
Clancy, I started to say. This is too good, he said with a bark of laughter.
Cole stiffened, his face turning to stone. The fury burning his pale eyes softened, going out of focus. I knew that look. I threw my mind at Clancy's, but it was like driving into a wall. I was thrown back, with a sting that zipped across my skull and turned into a pounding ache. We didn't have time for me to break the connection that way, before something would happen, before he'd turn Cole into his little action figure. I drew my elbow up and hit him right where Instructor Johnson had taught me, in the temple. Clancy's eyes rolled back, and he slumped forward, knocking his forehead against the dashboard. The wheels spun as I floored the gas pedal, trying to outrun the signal fire Cole had created. The smoke would be hard to miss for any helicopters or patrols. I didn't need to think about the consequences of Clancy knowing. I just needed to get us the hell out of here. My temples were still pounding, and my heart was still sputtering at an unnatural speed when I looked over and saw Cole rub his forehead.
"What the fuck?"
The words grew louder each time he repeated them until he was roaring them.
"What the fuck?"
I smelled smoke, saw how badly he shook. "Cole, listen to me. You have to calm down, okay?
Calm down. It's okay. He fumbled with the leather case in his lap, ripping out a vial of clear liquid and a syringe. I tried to look between him and the road as he filled it, but missed my opportunity to stop him before he slammed the needle down into the back of Clancy's neck.
Cole!
That'll keep the little shit under until the urge to beat his ass into next Tuesday passes, he growled.
Shit! That was nothing like the way you did it at HQ. Shit!
He tossed the syringe and bottle back into the pouch and let them slide down the dashboard. His hand was steady now, but his anxiety charged the air. It made me feel like I was sitting next to someone who was debating whether or not to light a fuse. He turned back toward the window, watching the buildings around us blur, but I could see his face in the reflection there, and it said everything he couldn't. He hadn't been in control when the Humvee caught fire, not even remotely. What did he show you?
Myself.
What do you mean? Cole leaned his forehead against the glass and shut his eyes.
It was a red camp somewhere. What they did to the poor kids to train them. I saw how everyone must see us, if that makes any sense. It was just... It felt like I was being smothered with smoke. There was nothing in their expressions, but for a second, I was scared shitless. It was like I was really there. They had me, and I was next.
I'm sorry, I said, unable to keep the tightness out of my voice. I realized what was happening a second too late. I should have...
It's my fault he figured it out,
Cole said sharply.
Don't take that blame, Jim. It's not yours to shoulder. You told me he was involved with Project Jamboree. I should have checked myself instead of acting like a monster. It's just... Damn it!
He slammed his fist against the door.
I wasn't thinking at all. I just... It won. For a minute, it won.
His words wrapped around my heart like a fist. I knew that feeling. It didn't matter how much power you possessed, how useful your abilities were. They had a will of their own. If you weren't constantly on top of them, they found ways to crawl out from under you.
Those kids. Those greens and blues especially. It all comes to them so easily, doesn't it?
Cole said quietly.
Easier to control. Easier to hide. It doesn't fuck up their lives the way it does for us. We have to be focused, otherwise we slip. And we can't slip.
Liam, Aunt Chubbs, and Vida, and all of them, hadn't been able to understand how much work went into controlling what I could do, so it didn't control me. Loosening my grip on the leash even for a second could mean hurting someone, hurting myself. It feels like I'm always at the edge of it, and I can't step in, not without feeling so damn scared I'm going to ruin everything. I want to stop ruining every good thing that comes my way. I couldn't control it for a really long time.
And you think I can? Jesus! Half the time I feel it boiling me alive under my skin. It simmers and simmers and simmers until I finally release the pressure. It was like that even when I was a kid.
Cole let out a faint, humorless laugh.
It wasn't like a voice or anything. Not one that whispered to me. It was just this urge, I guess. It was like I was always standing too close to a fire and needed to just stick my hand in once to see how hot it really was. I couldn't sleep at night. I thought for sure it was because my dad was actually the devil. Really, truly, the Prince of Darkness himself.
Harry? I asked, confused.
No, Bio-Dad. Harry's...
Right, forgot, I said.
Lee talks about him a lot, then?
He didn't wait for me to confirm before continuing.
Yeah, our real dad. That man. Dumb as a bag of hammers, mean as a snake. Not a good combination. I still fantasize about looking him up, breaking into the old house, and setting his whole world on fire.
Liam only brought him up once, I said, trying not to pry, no matter how much I wanted to. This was the one part of his life Liam wasn't willing to share, and as horrible as it was, it only made me want to pick at the scab more. When he lost his temper.
Good. Hopefully that means he doesn't remember the half of it. The guy was... he was a monster. He was the devil himself when he got his temper up. Guess one of us was bound to be a chip off the old block. I used to wonder, you know, if the abilities we have are somehow dependent on something we already have inside us. I thought, this fire, this is his anger. This is my dad's rage.
I knew it wouldn't do anything, or at least reassurance had never done much when it was delivered to me, but I had to say it. I had to tell him. You're not a monster.
Don't monsters breathe fire? Don't they burn down kingdoms and countries?
Cole sent me a wry smile.
You call yourself that too, don't you? No matter how many times others tell you it's not true, you've seen the proof. You can't trust yourself.
I settled back against my seat, wondering, for the very first time, if he wasn't just as desperate as the rest of us for a cure. This isn't about the camps for you, is it? I asked. It's about the cure. His throat bobbed as he swallowed.
Got it on the first try. Feel free to think I'm an asshole.
Why? Because you don't want to suffer like this? I asked sharply. Because you want to be normal?
What's normal? Cole asked. Pretty sure none of us remember what that feels like.
Fine, I pressed. Then, because you want a life where you're free from all of this bullshit? I want the cure more than I want my next breath. I never used to. I never let myself think of the future. And now it's like a compulsion. I want that freedom so badly, and it seems like the more I strain to try and reach it, the further away it gets. Cole rubbed his hand over his face, nodding.
I underestimate it sometimes. You forget, because you function, and each time you get kicked down, you manage to pick yourself up. But now, it's starting to get harder, right?
Yes. It was the first time I'd admitted it. The word was as hollow as I felt.
It's not that I don't think I won't be able to get up. It's that I'm afraid one day I'll just explode, combust, take out everyone I care about because I can't stop myself from feeling so damn angry all the time.
He pulled up his hand, holding it in front of his face, waiting for it to spasm again. When it didn't happen, his gaze shifted down to Clancy.
They keep them locked in these white rooms. Lights are on the whole time, and there are voices. Voices that don't stop, that are constantly telling them shit like, "You're wrong. Admit you're wrong so we can fix you." They hurt the kids. They really hurt them over and over. I could barely stand to see it, and I wasn't the one getting beaten. Was that real? Can he make stuff up?
My hands tightened around the wheel. He can plant any image he wants in your mind. But I think the truth is bad enough that he doesn't have to embellish it.
I don't know what pisses me off more, what they did to the kids, or that they figured out how to contain the fire in them. Shit, Jim. How the hell?
He shook his head as if to clear it.
If he tells any of the others, if he tells Liam, what am I supposed to do? None of the kids will come within 100 feet of me.
He's not going to, I promised. How much more of that stuff do you have? He unzipped the pouch.
3 more vials.
Then he'll stay out until we get to the ranch and we get him secured, I said. We'll keep him separated at all times, and I'll be the one he interacts with.
Killing him would be simpler.
There was nothing heated or furious about his words, and maybe that was why they were so disarming. Just cold, ruthless pragmatism. It was unsettling how fast the switch flipped.
Can't, I reminded him, recycling one of his own arguments.
He's the only one who knows where his mother is. You can't do anything to him, not until we find out where she is. I need the cure. Whatever it is, I need it.
I hate him more than anything in the world, but I hate living this way more. I hate the idea of there not being an end to this. Cole turned back toward the window, watching the buildings blur around us.
Then you and me, Jem. We'll have to figure out a way to stay one step ahead of our monsters.
I nodded. My throat was tight with the need to cry, with the surprise of finally having someone who understood, who struggled not just with everything and everyone around them, but with themselves.
Are you sure this isn't a nightmare?
He asked quietly.
And that we won't just wake up?
I stared ahead at the road, the way the dust blowing in from the desert covered it with a faint golden sheen, even as gray clouds began to gather over us. Yes, I said after some time, because dreamers always wake up and leave their monsters behind. 4. The rain started in with a clap of thunder just outside of Mojave, a small town situated at the base of the nearby mountain's craggy slopes. In the distance, over their jagged crowns, I could see the first hints of green.
That day's in,
Cole said, pointing to the small two-story complex hugging the corner.
Pull in there. We need to get them another car, and we need to switch ours out.
The town had been drained of its life some time ago, that much was clear by the complete and total lack of upkeep of its businesses and homes. It was a sight I'd grown used to over the past year, to the point that I didn't feel the creeping sense of dread that came with seeing empty playgrounds, or fresh dirt and graveyards, or homes that had been chained and boarded up. So not even California, which had run independently from the rest of the nation under the federal coalition, had been immune to the new normal of economic strife that the rest of the country had been clawing through.
People could be staying here, I said. They would stake it as their territory. Look at the cars here, Cole said. The amount of dirt on them. They've been sitting here a while. I haven't seen any movement through the hotel's windows or around the perimeter. Have you? Park. Pull up right there next to that gray Toyota.
I turned off the engine as he double-checked that Clancy was still out and still secured with zip ties. He went to inspect the other cars to find a working one with gas, and I jumped down from the driver's seat and all but ran around to the back to untie the tarp. The three of them sat up in unison, blinking against the dull light. Cool rain streaked down my face and neck as I helped the others down from the back. The air was thick with that strange, wonderful, indescribable smell that was unique to storms in the desert. Hey, I said, my hands closing around Liam's arms to steady him as he slid down off the bed. Are you all right? Liam nodded and squeezed my shoulder as he passed by.
Chubbs, wait! Damn it, buddy!
Without his glasses, the kid couldn't see a thing. Chubbs caught his toe on a pothole in the pavement and went down before Liam could reach him. After he used his good arm to get his friend back on his feet, he led Chubbs toward the edge of the motel's parking lot, and they disappeared around the corner. By the lack of explanation and how quickly they were moving, I took a guess about what kind of business they were conducting.
"Was it as special up front as it was in the back?" Vida asked, hopping down next to me.
Her joints popped as she stretched her arms and back.
No one's killed each other, I said.
Was it terrible back there?
Nah, Vida said with a shrug. A little uncomfortable and cold at some points. You took a sharp turn somewhere and Granny copped a feel by mistake. He looks like he wants to die of shame each time I bring it up. Basically, I'm going to milk that shit for all it's worth.
Do you have to? I asked pointedly.
Whatever. He was more pissed off by us playing a game of who could think of the worst nickname for him.
Let me guess. You won.
It was Boy Scout, actually.
I mean, come on. Even I couldn't top Chubby Chubby Choo Choo.
I almost pissed my pants laughing.
I made a mental note to give Chubbs a good long hug before we set off again. Glancing over to make sure the boys were making their way back toward us, a pop of color caught my eye. Shielding my eyes against the rain, I took a step toward the two small cement homes that were oddly positioned a short distance from the corner of the street. A crude array of graffiti marred the cracked cement wall that separated the side of the house from the nearby parking spaces.
"What?" Vida asked. "What's with that face?"
Most of the art wasn't really art at all, and a good portion hadn't been spray-painted. I wiped the rain from my face, tucking my wet hair out of the way. There were names scrawled there in permanent marker. A Henry, a Jaden, a Piper, and a Lizzie, all written in great looping letters under a large black outlined circle with what looked like a crescent moon inside of it. Vida trailed me as I walked over to it to get a better look. My eyes skimmed over the wall, vaguely aware of the steps coming up behind us. One of the tags, this one done in blue spray paint, was fresh enough that the letters there, what looked like A, K, L, Z, and H, were running, drooping down to the ground. I pressed my fingers against it, unsurprised that they came away sticky and stained.
"Oh, wow!"
Liam let out a startled laugh, stepping up next to me to get a better look.
"Oh, wow, what?"
Chubbs asked.
"It's road code. Remember, at East River?"
I glanced at Chubbs as his brow furrowed, clearly as confused as I felt. Liam had dived into camp life headfirst, befriending anyone and everyone, but I had kept mostly to Clancy, and Chubbs had kept mostly to himself.
"Well," Liam said, undaunted, "it was the system they worked out for safe travel. We used it to mark how to get back after going out on supply runs, and it was taught to all of the kids who left and went out on their own."
He flattened his palm against the crescent moon.
"I remember this one. This means that this is a safe place. To sleep, to rest, that kind of thing."
"And the names are what, kids who have passed through?" Vida asked.
"Yeah. They were supposed to do that in case they had to split up, or they were trying to leave a trail for another group to follow."
The rain was coming down harder, forcing him to stop and wipe it off his face.
"There are different ones for places to pick up food, where you can find supplies, a house of friendly people who might be willing to help you, and so on and so forth."
"Clancy thought of this?" I asked.
"Amazing, right?" Liam said. "I didn't know he was capable of thinking of anyone other than himself for 2 seconds without killing himself in disgust."
"Huh."
Chubbs held up one of his broken lenses and peered through it like a magnifying lens, ignoring Vida's snicker.
"Kids actually made it all the way out here from Virginia?"
"We did," I almost said, but our circumstances had been different, to say the least.
"I bet..."
Liam took my arm, leading me away from the others, walking to the corner where the house's fence met the fence running along the end of the parking lot. Down the street on the opposite corner was some kind of church. Painted there in bold black strokes were two inverted V's, one on top of the other, like arrows, surrounded by a circle.
"That's a directional marker to show them which road to take."
"Wow," I said. "I've been seeing those since we left Los Angeles. I had no idea. I just assumed it had something to do with road construction."
"What's funny is that I remember them from before, when we were driving through..."
He hesitated.
"Through Harrisonburg?"
I looked up at him, confused. But it hit me soon enough, and the question in his tone registered like the sharp ache of a repeat injury.
"We did drive through there. Together, I mean... I'm not remembering the wrong thing, am I?"
What killed me, almost more than the frustrated expression on his face, was that there was no accusation in his voice. I knew that what I had done to his memory had mostly been undone, I guess, but he still had moments of overlap between what had really happened and the story I had planted in his mind. I'd overheard him asking Chubbs for clarification a few times, but this was the first time I'd ever been so directly confronted with it. My whole chest ached. If I'd had the option of melting into a puddle and letting myself be carried down into the storm drain, I would have taken it. "No," I managed to get out. "You've got it right. We drove through on the way to that Walmart." I started to turn back to the motel, but he caught my wrist. I braced myself for whatever he was about to say, which, apparently, was nothing. He looked down, his thumb stroking the soft skin on the inside of my wrist. Finally, Liam said,
"I remember the other motel. It looked almost exactly like this one, but the doors weren't red."
He rubbed the back of his neck, a rueful grin on his face.
"I acted like an idiot, trying to give you a pair of socks."
In spite of myself, I smiled. "Yeah, what about serenading me with the doors? Come on, baby, light my fire."
"I probably would have put on a whole song and dance routine if you hadn't started laughing," he said. "That's how badly I wanted you to smile."
My heart hurt in a completely different way now. I rolled up onto my toes, pressing a soft kiss onto his cheek. There was a sharp whistle from the parking lot. Cole waved us back over from where he stood next to a compact white sedan. Liam rolled his eyes at the sight of it, but started toward the driver's side. Cole shook his head and pointed to Vida.
"She's driving."
He cut Liam's protest off before he could get a word in.
"No attitude. Your shoulder needs to rest. Trade off later." "You're such an asshole. I'm fine." "Is this what they call brotherly love?"
Chubbs wondered aloud.
"Hey, this works for me," Vida said, ignoring him.
"Maybe now we'll break 40 miles an hour."
"Laters. Try not to drive us directly into another military patrol, okay?"
"Be careful," I called after her, pointlessly.
"Ready, Jim?"
Cole asked. Instead of heading back to the red truck, he turned me in the direction of a new blue one.
"I got us new wheels. Someone probably reported the red one. The little prince is already inside and secure."
I noticed he was already walking toward the passenger side.
"Don't you want to drive?" I asked.
"Why? Do you need a break? Or are you okay to go a few more hours? I could use a second to close my eyes. We can switch when it gets dark."
It startled me a little bit to see how quickly Cole crashed once we were driving again. One minute, he was leaning his head against the window, telling me to take the next right and turn up my windshield wipers, and the next, he was dead to the world. I could do this. The truck was new enough to have an electronic compass on its display, and I really just needed to keep heading north until I started seeing signs for Lodi or Stockton. But the only signs I was seeing now were the ones spray-painted onto the sides of buildings, along walls, on marquees and storefronts and shopping centers. Once my eyes were open to them, I saw them everywhere. They dragged my eyes over to them again and again, screaming for my attention. When I saw the next set in the distance, I felt a reckless thought sneak up on me. I hesitated, looking over at Cole, trying to weigh how angry he'd be. We were flying toward the road symbols, and if I didn't turn now, I might lose the trail completely. "Does it matter? You don't even know these kids." It did, because I knew what it was like trying to survive on the road, and if they needed help, I wanted us to be the ones who gave it to them. I made that first right turn when the arrows suddenly shifted. They took me away from the two highways that would have gotten me over and through the mountains to Oak Creek Road, which, in another life, might have been the scenic route to take through these parts. Another right turn onto Tehachapi Willow Springs Road, which skirted the city of Tehachapi. All of the signs announcing the approaching city were marked with a large X with a small circle around the letter's center. The shape reminded me enough of a skull and crossbones that I didn't want to risk ignoring it. It was up near an aquatics park that my mind started to go a bit soft. I caught my eyes closing and jerked back awake more than once. "Stop it," I thought. "Wake up, wake up, wake up." Cole needed to finally be able to recharge after the two hellish weeks we'd had on the run in Los Angeles. I could handle this. I could at least stay awake until we had to stop again for gas. The light dimmed with every minute that passed, the winter sun setting even earlier behind the silver storm clouds. In the gray-blue light, the cement sign for the recreation area seemed to glow, and the tags there seemed especially dark in comparison. The initials I saw gave my brain something to play with, at least, while I watched the road. P-G-J-R.
Paul, George, John, and Ringo. Parrot, giraffe, jaguar, rabbit. Pistol, Glock, Jericho, rifle. HB, FB. Hazel, big wig, fiver, blackberry. Hash browns, bacon, flapjacks, bran flakes. Harrisonburg, Bedford, Fairfax, Bristol. Below that line of initials was another faint one. I slowed the truck, squinting through the sheet of rain at it. The downpour had nearly carried the letters away, but I could still see the faintest hint of K-L-Z-H. Kia, Lexus, Z-something, Honda. Okay, that one didn't exactly work. Kansas, Led Zeppelin, ZZ Top, The Hollies. Damn, Z was hard. Zebras, Zoo, Zero, Zilch, and Zoo. And that was it. That was all my brain had. I yawned through my smile. K something, Liam, Zoo, Hina. Oh, Kylie. Kylie from East River. That worked. Kylie, Liam, Zoo, Hina. Or even Kylie, Lucy, Zoo, and Hina. The air whooshed through the vents, louder now that my mind was completely still and silent. It filled my ears until my heart started banging against my ribcage, hard enough for the sound to reach my ears. Kylie, Lucy, Zoo, and Hina. My mind was singing out the names over and over again until I felt almost delirious. Stop it. I tried to move on. Tried kangaroo, lion, zebra, hyena. But I couldn't shake the fizzing sensation in my blood. If they were kids leaving that tag, then we couldn't have been far behind them. And if they knew how to follow the code, then they had to be from East River, right? I'd only seen one group of kids actually leave East River, and that had been Zoo's group. Stop it, I thought, sucking down a long gulp of the air coming through the vents. I reached over to turn the heat up slightly, trying to drive out the chill. There were other kids, plenty of other kids, with those same first letters. And regardless of who the other girl had been, if it was Zoo's group, then there should have been a T there for Talon, the teen boy who'd gone with them. I tried to call up each of their faces, but Kylie, Lucy, Talon, and Hina were blank. Weird how I could remember their hair, the way they'd worn their black bandanas, the sound of their voices, but not what any of them really looked like. My mind had blocked out so much of our time at East River as a defense against the pain, it all might as well have happened to a different person. But Zoo. I remembered everything about Zoo. From the way her hair spiked up first thing in the morning to each freckle across her nose. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw yet another code tag. Two of them, on a sign with directions to the nearby freeway that was counting down the miles to the next city. One was the crescent moon in a circle. The other was a set of arrows pointing right, east, not straight ahead like the others. I switched the truck's headlights on, letting them flood the clusters of trees on either side of the road. I started to pull the truck over onto the shoulder, wishing I had some other way to talk to Liam and Chubbs, but I stopped myself. These past few days had been hard enough on Liam already. Giving him this thrill, only to have it ripped away, seemed especially cruel. Chubbs could bear the disappointment, but Liam? I didn't want to see his face fall when it all turned out to be nothing. I'd already let him down so many times, in so many ways, I couldn't add this to the list. But there was that small voice rising above the other thoughts, whispering, "What if it is her, though?" Kylie, Lucy, Zoo, and Hina. K-L-Z-H. This was dangerous. This was letting myself think that sometimes life had the near-magical quality of working out. It could unfold in a way that's so much better and easier than what you could have imagined. That paint. It had been fresh enough to run under the insistent stroke of rain, hadn't it? They couldn't have been that far ahead. Don't do this to yourself, I thought.
We were farther north than where Liam thought her uncle's home was, and the initials were still missing Talon's T. Maybe it was exhaustion, or desperation, or some kind of need to prove that life could sometimes be kind. Whatever it was, I couldn't ignore it. What was the risk in following this trail through, just to see what was waiting for us at the end? What if this was the one chance we'd ever have of finding her? Jude would have done it. With him, it wouldn't have even been a debate. I still felt crazy taking the next right, and clearly the others felt the same way. Vida tapped the horn, a quiet question. It was a dark access road, not even paved. The truck settled into the mud, rolling through the fresh tracks left by another set of tires. The overgrown trees lining the road were gnarled and twisted into each other. I kept the truck moving fast enough to tear through them, snapping branches and ripping away leaves. It was that noise, not the earlier inquiring honk from the other car, that finally shook Cole out of his 2-hour nap. I saw him tense, running his hands over his face once, twice, trying to clear up the disorientation brought on by such a deep sleep.
"You should have woken me up."
He squinted at the glowing dashboard console.
"Wait, where the hell are we? Why are we going east, not north?"
"I have a hunch," I said.
"Yeah, and I have a pain in my ass, and surprise, it's you," he said, glaring at me over Clancy's prone form. "What's this about?"
"I think..." The trees suddenly pulled back, and I saw that the road we'd come in on hadn't really been a road at all, but a long driveway up to what once must have been a gorgeous mountain home. The thing was massive. 2 stories, a double-wide garage. The face of the house was stone and wood, as if despite its hulking presence, it was still meant to blend in.
"Still waiting on that answer," Cole said as I threw the car into park.
"I think there may be some kids hiding here," I said. "I just want to have a quick look around. I swear, I'll be fast." Cole set his jaw, and I wondered what kind of expression I had that ultimately made him nod and say,
"Fine, but take Vida with you. You have 2 minutes.
The others had opened their doors, but only Liam had stepped out into the rain.
"What's going on?"
he called. "I just need Vida for a second," I said. "Nope, just her. Her, it's a quick thing." Chubbs groaned.
"What kind of thing? A Ruby walks into mortal danger thing?"
I shut the door on any further questions, wincing as I saw the hopeful look Vida shot me as she walked over.
"Is this about... is it Kate?"
Her whole face was glowing with hope, almond eyes wide, full lips parted, as if she was uncertain if she should smile. God, if Kate hadn't made it, if she wasn't there waiting for us, I didn't think I'd be able to put Vida back together. "I think there might be kids hiding out here."
That perked her right up.
I saw her hand slide back into the pocket of her sweatshirt, reaching for the gun hidden there.
"All right, cool," she said. "How do you want to play this?"
The front door and the first story windows were all boarded over. The back and side entrances were too. Vida's initial excitement quickly faded as we trampled through the mud and tall grass in the dark, slipping and sliding our way around the house a second time. There were no ladders that I could see to help someone up to the second floor. No lights on, no sounds coming from inside the house. The odd, shadowy shape on the garage door took form the closer we got, stopped me dead in my tracks. It was a crude crescent moon, cut out of some kind of metal. Someone had hammered it up with a single nail. Safe place. I took a deep breath and reached for the cold metal of the garage door handle. Vida hung back, but brought her gun up, aiming. At nothing at all. No cars, no bags, no kids huddled on blankets. Aside from rows of gardening tools and trash cans, there was only trash. The bright wrappers were scattered in heaps around the dark space. Vida dragged her boots through the trash, scattering it. Now that my eyes were adjusting to the light, I could see other signs that there'd been at least one person here recently. A small pile of blankets and an abandoned duffel bag.
"Come on," she said. "If anyone was here, they must have peaced out days ago."
There were tracks in the mud on the drive-in, I said, wondering if my words sounded more solid than my thoughts did. I started toward the door that led into the house, only to be stopped short by the sight of the padlock hanging from it. Cole honked the horn, and it was the slap in the face I needed. You are acting crazy, I thought. Pull yourself together. There are more important things. No. No, there weren't. Because the truth of it was, I would have walked here. I would have walked here all the way from Los Angeles, alone, in the dark, in the pouring rain, if it had meant finding Zoo again. I wanted it that badly. I needed to know she was safe, and that she was okay, and that I hadn't failed her the way I'd failed all of the others. Even the part of me that had expected this felt sad and small and foolish as I followed Vida out. I was glad for the rain now, anything to hide the fact that one wrong word, one bad stray thought, would push me to tears. Vida put her hands on her hips, surveying the dark line of trees that formed a high wall around the house.
This would be a good place to crash for a couple days.
I saw the signs too, you know. And I think if you hadn't come and looked, it would have bugged the shit out of you forever.
Sorry to drag you out here, I mumbled.
Vida waved me off as she moved back toward the other car. Liam had left his door open, and the light inside gave me a clear view of two very concerned faces. Vida stopped in her tracks, slowly bent down at the edge of the driveway, and picked something up, something white and filthy with mud.
Hey, boo,
she called, tossing it over to me. My fingers were shaking and slick with rain, but somehow I managed to catch it. It was a small shoe, clearly kid-sized. The white fabric was nearly black with mud and grime, but the laces were still a rosy shade of pink, like not even dirt could put a damper on it. I studied it, running my fingers over the swirled stitching along its side. Cole made it perfectly clear my hijacking of our drive was over. He'd taken my place behind the wheel and was in the process of rolling down his window when I tossed the shoe back onto the ground and said,
"I know, I know."
My whole body shook with how hard my teeth were chattering. Cole took pity on me and redirected the warm air blowing from the vents my way, but he didn't say a word, and I didn't offer to start the conversation either. That shoe. God, that shoe with those curling pink laces. Vida swung the car around, taking the lead on the drive back out to the main road. Cole followed, fiddling with the radio as the truck's headlights cut through the trees and foliage. There was a flash of movement as some kind of animal darted away.
All right, Cole said. Do you have any idea where we are? Did you see a city name? Jim.
My mind was fixed on the shoe, obsessing over the stitching, how it had felt warm despite the chilled air and rain. And those laces, those pink laces were like something out of... I sucked in a gasp, loud and sharp enough to startle Cole into hitting the brakes.
What? What?
But I was already scrambling to unbuckle my seatbelt, already jumping back out into the rain, running back up toward the house. I knew those laces. I had picked those shoes out because of them. I'd dug down deep into that bin at Walmart because I knew she'd love them. I knew. The gunshot that boomed out, echoing in the dark mountains around us, was the only thing that could have stopped me, and it did. My momentum carried me forward, my feet sliding through the mud as I threw up my hands in the air. Both cars had stopped. Cole used the open driver's side door of the truck to try to stop Liam and Vida from blowing past him. What guns we had were drawn and pointed into the trees. I took another small step forward. I wasn't thinking about skip tracers or PSFs or the National Guard or even the home's owners. I was thinking about how terrifying it would be for a kid hiding out in those woods, not knowing who was stalking around one of the few places they thought were safe. They hadn't shot me dead yet. That was a good sign, at least. Zoo? I called, raising my voice above the rain ruffling the trees. No response.
Zoo!
I yelled, taking another step forward.
Suzume! Zoo!
The forest seemed to let out a long sigh around me, settling back down into the night.
If someone was there, it wasn't her. She would have come. Wouldn't she? I felt a sharp twist of despair low in my gut as I started backing away.
Okay,
I said.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're going.
Glancing back over my shoulder, I saw Cole lower his gun. I saw Liam come around the door to stand next to him, stretching a hand out in my direction, only to drop it back to his side. He took another step forward, only to stop, his eyes flashing wide. And when I turned back toward the woods, she was the only thing I saw. A blur of white and pink and black burst out from the shelter of the trees, away from the pale arms that tried to snatch her shirt and haul her back. Gangly limbs slipped and slid through the mud, covering the space between us so quickly I barely had time to get my arms up. Zoo slammed into me with the kind of force that should have tilted the world onto its side. I fell back, taking her with me, letting out a noise that was halfway between a laugh and a sob as I wrapped my arms around her. She buried her face against my hair and all but wilted against me. Every limb in her body went lax, like she was molding herself to me. The shot of pure, unwavering joy hit me like a bolt of lightning. It sang a sweet song in my head, warmed me down to my toes. I was so wrapped up in the feeling that it was a full minute before I realized how hard she was shaking, how cold she was to the touch. She was crying, small gasps of sound that didn't signal happiness. I set her back so I could see her face, and she only gripped my sleeves harder, shaking her head. "I think this is yours," I said, holding up her shoe. She let me try to wipe the mud from her bare right foot before I slid it back on and tightened it. It must have fallen off as she ran toward those trees. They'd heard us coming and panicked.
Zoo!
Liam came toward us so fast he slid through the last few feet of mud, landing on the ground with us.
Zoo!
All she had to do was turn her head, and the elation on his face faded to panicked concern. He took her hands when she reached out to him, studying every inch of her for bruises, cuts, anything to explain why she was looking at us like we were back from the dead, why she was holding on to us like we might vanish with her next breath.
"Is it her?"
Chubbs called desperately, stumbling toward us.
"I can't see."
"Here, slow your roll."
Vida turned back and retrieved him from behind the car door, guiding him around. He patted his front pocket, reaching in for one of the lenses.
"Hey, what's a girl like you doing in a place like this?"
Liam asked, letting her small hands run over his wet hair, cup his face. Chubbs dropped to his knees, sending a spray of mud over all of us. He held out his arms in what he must have thought was her direction.
"You're not alone, are you? You know what happens when you try to travel by yourself. There's..."
Zoo tackled him to the ground. The mud smacked against his back at the same moment the air went out of him.
"Well, all right,"
he murmured, carefully tucking her against his shoulder.
"You are freezing. We need a blanket before she goes into hypothermic..."
Zoo reached up and put a hand over his mouth, making Liam laugh and laugh. The smile she offered back was trembling, small, but still there. I felt like crying myself seeing it. I studied her, trying to align this new vision with the image I had tucked safely away in my memory. Her hair had grown back in long enough to curl around her ears. Everything else about her had changed, too. She was taller, but thinner. Painfully thin. The skin on her cheeks had sunken in. And even in the dark, I could see the same was true for the others who came out from behind the trees. They stumbled toward us, blinking against the car's lights. I counted 12 in all, different heights, different shapes, but all kids. All kids. Kylie and Zoo's cousin Hina came out of the trees next. It only took seeing Lucy for me to remember the dozens of times I'd taken food she'd spooned out at all of East River's meals. She made me think of fire smoke, of pine, of the sunset reflecting on the nearby lakes. And the three of them, all of the kids, really, looked at us like we were blinding them.
I'm sorry, Kylie said. I didn't realize it was you, otherwise I wouldn't have fired. We just... the skip tracers and the soldiers and everything. Behind me, I heard Cole let out a long sigh.
We're going to need to find another car, he said. Aren't we?
5. For all the hope I had that we'd find her, I'm not sure I ever thought about what would actually happen to Zoo if we did. But it became clear, from the moment Liam saw her, that it was the only thought running through his mind. I thought you'd be at her uncle's house, I said. What happened? Why did you leave?
He wasn't there. We would have stayed anyway, but there was an incident just after we got there, Kylie was explaining as we walked. The trees pulled back to reveal a small clearing, ringed with darkness. When they heard our cars coming, they'd smothered the fires, but the clearing was still filled with the smell of smoke.
What kind of incident? Liam asked.
A bad one. There was a guy. Turns out a good guy. He... never mind, it doesn't matter.
Kylie shook her head of dark curls, smoothing down the front of her ripped shirt.
We've been moving from town to town since then. When I saw the trail of road code, I picked it up, hoping we'd find some other kids, but they're not having an easy time of it either.
I felt my eyes widen at the sight of the soaking wet, makeshift tents they'd strung up using bedsheets and the old food cans and buckets they'd left out to catch water.
You drove in, right?
Liam asked.
Where did you stash the car?
Behind the shed at the back of the house.
Kylie tried to wring her shirt out, without much luck. The others standing around her had introduced themselves in a blur. I didn't recognize any of them. Lucy had been quick to specify that two of them, Tommy and Pat, had left East River a few months before we'd ever arrived. The other three members of their tribe had split when the going had gotten too rough for them, and they hadn't heard from them since. The other 10 teenagers, all about 15, were strays they'd picked up as they moved across the country. Tommy was as long and narrow as the tree flanking him, his shocking head of copper-red hair mostly hidden under a beanie. Pat was about a head shorter and walked and talked with a frantic, bumbling energy that made it almost impossible to keep up with him.
Well,
Cole said, looking at the sad camp set up around us,
y'all tried.
I'm just wondering.
Lucy stepped out in front of us, her braided blonde hair swinging over her shoulder. She was wearing an oversized 49ers sweatshirt and black leggings that were shredded at the knees.
What are you guys doing here? When did you leave East River?
Oh, damn. Of course they wouldn't know. They couldn't have found out. I glanced over to Liam, but he was looking down at where Zoo clung to his hand.
Save story time for later, Cole said. Pack up whatever you guys want to bring with you.
Wait, what? Liam said.
Hold on, they don't even know what they're getting into.
Cole rolled his eyes and turned back to the other kids, clapping his hands together.
I'll break it down for you. We used to be part of a group called the Children's League. Then the president decided he wanted to destroy us, the Federal Coalition, and all of Los Angeles. Now we're heading up north to set up shop and figure out new fun ways to kick his ass. Are there any questions?
Tommy raised his hand.
They destroyed Los Angeles? Like, literally? I don't think we speak figuratively anymore, Cole said. It's a flaming heap of rubble. You guys are welcome to park yourselves here, but the military has control of the borders and freeways, and they've likely got a new stranglehold on what gas and food is out there. Meaning, life is about to get a hell of a lot harder if you don't find yourselves a safe place.
I think the kids were actually too shocked to cry. They traded stunned glances, clearly struggling to process this. Starvation doesn't help much on that front either, I thought, looking at the way the rain made Kylie's shirt cling to her sharp hip bones.
And where we'd be going? That's a safe place? Pat asked. Tell them the truth,
Liam said sharply.
It may be a safe, secure location, but we're always going to have targets on our backs. You've never done anything just out of the goodness of your heart, so what's the catch, Cole? They come with us and they have to fight? They have to work for their food and beds?
Well, realistically, we'll probably all be in sleeping bags, Cole said, irritation simmering under each word. But no, no catches. If they want to be trained, then we'll train them. If they want to fight, then who the hell am I to stop them? But I have a feeling they're just as invested in finding out what caused IAAN and learning more about this so-called cure. And I also have this here little feeling that they'll be hard-pressed to find another group willing to help them get back to their parents. Don't manipulate them into thinking this is...
This is what? I asked quietly, pulling him aside. A way for them to survive? Liam, I get it. Fighting is dangerous. But this kind of life is dangerous too, isn't it? Being sick and starved and constantly on the run? They don't have to stay at the ranch forever. We can get them out once we figure out a safe system for it, if that's what they want. He looked pained. If he had struggled with the idea of me being trapped with the League, what were the chances he would ever accept this for Zoo? No matter how much he wanted to see the camps freed, to see a real cure out there, his first instinct was always going to be to take the road that was safest for the people he cared about the most. When all of this is over, I said, my eyes sliding over to where Cole was helping the other kids eagerly pack up their things, we can go anywhere we want. Isn't that worth it? Having her come with us now is the only way we can guarantee she's safe. We can take care of her. We should never have let her go in the first place. He let out a rush of breath.
Hey, Zoo, how would you feel about helping us start a little war?
She looked up at him, and over to me, her eyebrows drawn together as she considered this. Then Zoo shrugged, like, sure, got nothing better to do.
All right.
Liam released the words on the tail end of a sigh, and I felt the tension escape my body with it. With one arm around my shoulder, and his other hand on Zoo's, we started back through the trees to where the others were waiting. It was grounding, the familiarity of it, like I was finally tethered back to the world again.
All right.
By the time we made it back to the cars, Chubbs and Vida were there, leaning against the side of the truck. But while Chubbs was practically bouncing on the balls of his feet, firing off 100 questions to Zoo that he had no chance of getting answers to, Vida took one look at her, crossed her arms over her chest, and came toward us. Hey, Vi, this is... She didn't stop. Not to let me finish, not to take Zoo's hand when she held it out to shake. Vida's eyes flashed as they met mine, and the accusation there was as silent as it was baseless. Her jaw clenched with the venom she was clearly fighting to keep back. Can we get out of this fucking dump now? And just like that, the feeling of security was gone. A sick unease crept in, tearing my attention in two. Half of me wanted to go after her into the woods, and the other half, the louder, more demanding one, wanted to stay exactly where I was, happily caught up in my love for the three people around me. My heart was swollen with it as Zoo wrapped her arms around Chubbs's narrow waist again, and he patted the top of her head in his usual awkward way. Liam had turned to follow Vida's shape as it disappeared into the darkness. When he turned back, I saw the question there. My own confusion reflected back. But I had no idea why she was angry. It was hours past midnight by the time we reached Lodi, and the moon was already beginning its downward glide toward the western horizon. I'd slept on and off for a total of 4 hours, but felt absolutely no better for it. Sticking to surface streets, winding up California's spine at a leisurely pace, had added an extra 4 hours to an already long trip. And the extra hour it took to find one more car, and enough gas to keep us all going, rounded it out to an even 10 hours. We seemed to be caught in some kind of reality in which time was simultaneously stretching and shrinking. Minutes flew by, but in endless numbers. The rushing tides of anxiety and fear washed in and out of me, and I caught myself sending up desperate, silent prayers that we'd find Kate and the others waiting for us. The day had already gone too well, and I knew better than to expect some kind of pattern to form. Life had the nasty habit of lifting me up just to throw me back down.
The town was more rural than I was expecting, at least the fringes of it. There were a number of barren fields that might once have been vineyards, but they'd been left to wither and die in the shadow of a series of long, silver warehouses.
"There it is,"
Cole said, lifting his hand from the wheel to point. I was surprised he could tell the difference between each, given that they looked identical to my eye, especially in the dark. "Are they here?"
"We'll know in a second."
The sky had blossomed into pale lavender by the time we entered the edge of town, our little line of cars like a parade through the empty streets. Cole's mood was shifting again, ticking higher and lighter as the car slowed and turned into a used car dealership. He guided the car into one of the empty covered spaces, next to what was most definitely an old exterminator's van and an electrical company's truck. Not a used car dealership, I thought. At least not anymore.
"Okay, Jim."
Cole took a deep breath and glanced up at the roof of the car, muttering something I couldn't hear.
"You ready?"
"What about him?" I asked, nodding toward Clancy's limp form.
"Leave him for now. I just gave him another dose. I'll come back out for him after we make sure everything's secure."
It didn't seem like the best idea, but I was so tired I found myself nodding anyway, too tired to fight. Besides, the kid was still breathing low and even, bent over at the waist and out of sight. This time, I was the one to double-check that his hands and feet were still zip-tied. It was the last complete, coherent thought I seemed to have. My whole body ached with exhaustion as I climbed out. I could taste it at the back of my throat, feel it in the watery consistency my eyes had taken on. Liam found me immediately and cast a questioning look in the direction of the truck. I waved him off and leaned into his arm when he wrapped it around me. I kept trying to count the kids off, starting each time with Zoo and Hina, but I couldn't seem to get past 10 without forgetting my place and needing to start again. Focusing on one thing, Chubbs's voice as he fired question after question to Vida about the blurred shapes around him, helped keep me alert. But it still took my brain far too long to process why we were standing outside of some kind of bar, hovering at the door. Liam followed my line of sight.
"She didn't say a single thing to Zoo,"
he said quietly.
"I know she's not a cuddle bug, but is this normal? Because if it keeps going the way it is, I'm going to have a problem with it."
I looked over at Vida again. "It takes her a while to warm up. I'll talk to her." Cole peered in through one of the windows, ignoring the unlit electric open sign. Letting out a deep breath, he tested the door to Smiley's pub. Locked.
"Is this a bar?"
Chubbs whispered behind me.
"Are we allowed to go in? We're not 21.
"Oh, Granny," Vida sighed. "I can't even."
I looked through the front window. There was a lot of pale, polished wood, empty shelves behind the bar itself, and red vinyl wherever there was seating. Old classic rock tour posters were tacked up between all of the pictures of bikini-clad women lounging on sports cars.
"Do we have to break in?"
I asked Cole.
"Nah, I was just checking to see if they were still using the joint as a front. The entrance to the ranch is behind the bar."
For a second, I was confused, thinking he meant behind the counter inside the bar. Instead, he stepped down from the curb and jutted his chin toward the small alley between Smiley's pub and the empty store beside it. We fell in place behind him, stepping around garbage cans and empty, stacked crates until we reached a back door. Cole went right up to it and pressed 6 numbers into the electronic keypad there. It flashed, beeped, and the door popped open, revealing what looked like a typical back room. There were shelves along each wall, most of them bare.
"It's a long way down," Cole said over his shoulder. "Anyone afraid of heights? The dark? Nah, of course not. You guys are champs. Just be careful, you hear?"
Long way down. God, another underground tunnel. A long one, I'd bet, based on the fact that we were far enough away from the ranch's main building that I hadn't been able to see it from out in front of Smiley's. We'd had a similar setup for accessing HQ down in Los Angeles. The entry point had been a parking garage, which brought you down via elevator to what we called the tube. That tunnel had been so hellish in its sewer stink and mold-slick walls, you half expected to find the devil waiting for you at the other end of it. To access the trapdoor that opened to the ranch's tunnel, we all had to cram into the small bedroom set at the back of the bar and lift the bed and rug that had been placed over it. A cold, stale burst of air rushed up to meet us as Cole kicked the door open.
"Cool!"
Tommy and Pat said, leaning to look down into the dimly lit space. Kylie made a face in Lucy's direction, but was the third one down after Cole. Most of the teens went next, too tired to really question what was happening or where they were being taken. It was worse for the younger kids. Zoo and Hina were mirror images of complete and total fatigue. They swayed on their feet like they'd snuck a few glasses back at the bar, and they couldn't focus their eyes on Liam, even as he was helping to navigate them over the lip of the ladder. He and I both had to help Vida get a half-blind, incredibly grumpy Chubbs down next. Then it was his turn. I knew it was irrational, the way that fear seemed to walk up behind me and press a blade to my throat. I knew that we were not under attack, that there were already kids down on the path, and they were fine, that I'd have to walk it if I ever wanted to get to the ranch. I knew all that, but I still couldn't move. Liam caught my expression and brought a reassuring smile to his face. Even with all of those unspoken words between us, he could still read my every fear. One of his hands wove through my hair and cupped the side of my face as he kissed my temple.
"Different tunnel, different destination, different end," he promised. "Okay."
I swallowed and forced myself to nod as he started down the ladder. The moment his head of pale hair disappeared, I felt my skin shrink back against my bones and my stomach flip. Different end. I turned the words over in my head. An end. This was just the beginning of it. I straightened, smoothing my ponytail back over my shoulder, and took the first step. The second. The third. I tried not to think of the way the darkness seemed to well up around me, swallowing me down. At the exact moment I was sure I'd be climbing down forever, I finally found solid ground. The rest of the morning took on a strange, almost unreal quality. The tunnel was lit by strings of Christmas lights, some of them blinking, some of them out completely, but only ever revealing a small section of path at a time. It was all stark, unforgiving cement. The low ceiling and narrow walls amplified each and every voice, carrying whispers and sighs back through the darkness like ghosts. I sucked in shallow breath after shallow breath, feeling the blood actually start to pound out a low beat behind my eyes. This really was the prototype for HQ in Los Angeles, on a much smaller scale, and partly above ground if what Cole said was true, but similar enough to send a shudder through me. My mind was playing catch and release with the sights and sounds around me, filtering everything through a milky lens. It made me feel almost like I was seeing it all happen through someone else's memories. The smell of sweat and damp clothes, a grunt of pain from Vida, Chubbs's bleak, hopeless expression as he stared down the dark. Zoo passed out against Liam's back, her arms wrapped around his neck as he carried her in. We walked for so long, there were moments I forgot where we were heading. Up ahead of us, Cole climbed up a half flight of stairs and banged on something metal, a large, rusted square that must have been a door. There were no handles facing into the tunnel. We'd need to be let in from the other side.
"What if no one's here?"
I heard Chubbs ask. I pretended, for the sake of my heart, that I hadn't heard him at all. He pounded his fist against it for another minute before the kids behind him crowded at his back and started banging against it with him. "No one is here," I thought. "They didn't make it." I couldn't breathe. There was nowhere to go. The walls were so close on either side of me. The kids behind me were blocking my route out. I felt Liam wrap an arm around my shoulder, but the weight of it made my chest feel even tighter.
My feet tripped over themselves, backward, just as there was a loud groan and the pathway was flooded with light. Kate? I shielded my eyes, trying to make out who the figure was. Then Cole sang out,
"Hello, Dolly."
"Oh, my God!" There was a faint note of some kind of accent in her voice. Maybe New York, New Jersey. "Hurry up! Get in here! My God!" We thought, we were worried. We were going to have to go out and find you. Liam guided us forward, up the stairs, into the light. I hadn't realized how cold I was until a delicate wave of warmth rolled over us. I stepped inside, blinking against the flood of fluorescent light overhead. Dolly blew out an aggravated sigh, moving down the line of us, blinking as she reached where I was standing beside Liam. She glanced between him and Cole.
"Oh, God, there's another one of you? How has the world survived this long?" "Pure dumb luck," Cole said. "Is everyone here?"
Dolly visibly hesitated.
"Well, not exactly."
"Kate?" The word came out of Vida in a naked rush of hope.
"Connor's just fine. She's been worried sick about everyone."
Liam's arm tightened around me as he glanced down, his expression so sincerely thrilled on my behalf as I leaned into him that my faint smile was almost a reflex. It surprised me, though, that the first feeling to flood into the hole that fear had left in me wasn't elation or relief. Those came only on the heels of a sudden, sharp ache that radiated out from my core. She doesn't know. Kate had survived, made it up here in spite of fiercely skewed odds, and she'd been waiting. The only message Dolly would give her is that we were here. She wouldn't know about Jude. I would have to keep from throwing my arms around her and crying long enough to tell her. She doesn't know anything. And now she would.
"What do you mean, not exactly?" Cole said, looking around. 10 of you came to open the place, right? And Connor brought her dozen..."
Dolly's sneakers gave a faint squeak as she shifted uncomfortably. She was saved from having to answer by the sound of bare feet slapping against the tile. My heart jumped into my throat as a head of pale blonde hair rounded the corner of the hall at full speed. "Kate!" Vida launched herself toward her, tearing through the mass of kids that stood between them, nearly tackling them both to the ground. "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry," Kate was saying. "We were just outside of the attack zone and couldn't get back in through all of the barricades that were set up." Kate looked past Vida's shoulder to where I stood, a relieved smile on her face as her eyes met mine. "Oh, God. Oh, my God, she doesn't know." I couldn't get the words to my mouth, couldn't move. Heat flooded beneath my skin, the sweat bringing the guilt and shame and anger and sadness up from every pore. And then she wasn't looking at either of us, but at the empty space at my other side. She was looking at the whole hall, her eyes tearing from one person to another, all the while holding Vida to her tighter. She was looking for him. In the end, I didn't need to say anything at all. She had to have known, the first second she saw my face. Liam's hand found mine, tightening around my fingers as he pulled me away, bringing me in close to his side. I pressed my face